I say skip the Eiffel Tower. Here's my tip. Here's my tip for Paris.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, I discovered, no, less than that, 2 or 3 years ago, I discovered Rue Montaigu. The oldest patisserie in Paris is called Storer, S-T-O-H-R-E-R. I follow them on Instagram. Bill, it's been there since 1750. This is where they make the pastries and fruit tarts and things like that. They do the most incredible sandwiches in the daytime. I always tell people, when you go there, get 2 sandwiches. So an hour later, when you're walking around and you say to yourself, fuck, I wish I'd have bought a second sandwich. You've already got it, because Tom Rhodes told you to fucking do this.
Well, I'm a traveling man. Yes, I'm a traveling man. Yes, I'm a traveling man.
Okay, we're off. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 351. Not 350. Not 350. 350 will be next week, because every 50 is a Danish O'Neill episode. And the Danish O'Neill episode for this 50 is the Shooter Live Table Read. I'm having technical difficulties with it right now. The file I got from the Bell House was incomplete, so they got to look on their Zoom back at the actual venue and like see if they still have the original file. If not... As disappointing as it is, I will have missed the last 15 to 20 minutes. So maybe I'll, if that happens, then maybe I'll redo the voice at the end and just close it out for you guys. But I don't know. I fucking hope they find it. Anyway, so right now we're going to 351. And I'm glad we did, because this is all about travel. And you know I love that. Tom Rhodes is, people say I'm the biggest travel comic. I'm not. Yoshi's really big. Jason Rouse. But the number one guy, everybody knows, hands down, if you know the comedy scene, it's Tom Rhodes. So here's what happens when a comic goes on the road a lot. You'll have your act or just the material you're working on and maybe some new jokes. But generally, your mind is kind of like unlocked by the environment, by the new environment, a new place. And so you'll end up having a bit about that place, about maybe where the hotel is or... maybe the city in general. Generally, it's like somebody's like, oh, you got to go to this spot when you're here. And then you do a bit about it, and 90% of the people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, imagine, like, oh, you got to go to New York. If you're going to New York, oh. Like, I don't know, maybe you saw, like, oh, the guy at the bottom of the Empire State Building was really rude. The guy checking tickets. And you do a bit about that. Everyone from New York's like, dude, none of us have been to the Empire State Building. Or we went once, like, 10 years ago. So people can relate or not relate to the fucking, you know... Aubon Payne over there on the main street. Tom Rhodes, who goes everywhere, travels everywhere, did an album called Around the World. I've used that title for this episode. I'm walking to get Baskin Robbins right now. It's summer for me now, dude. I couldn't stand the cold anymore. I'll get back to it in a second. He did an album where he compiles all of that stuff from these travels. All of that material he does for the crowds in that city. And he made an album out of it. And it's not just an album. It's a fucking double or triple album. It's 30-something tracks, 24 cities, I think. And some of them are doubled up. You know, he has 3 from Paris, I think 2 or maybe 4 from Vancouver, 1 from Belfast, and 2 from Batanbor, Mongolia, which is, I mean, you'll hear it as we talk. You can just see the seed get planted in my brain. And so Tom's been to all these places. So some of the stuff he has is just history of the place, you know? Facts, you know, jokes about, like, George Washington, who was visiting America for the first time. Or you know, that dude who buried the tablets if he's in Salt Lake City, Joseph Smith. And then some of them are personal stories about something that's happened to him in this city. Because he hasn't been to these places once. He's been there... over and over again. So this is a fucking, I don't know, travelogue. What we did is we went in and we went over all the cities that he used on this album, this triple album, this opus of a fucking album, Around the World, available on iTunes now, available at tomrhodes.com now. It's tomrhodes.net. I hope it's .com. And I asked my questions of what I want to know about the city. Not, you know, tell me the main street, but like, what's fun to do there? What are the chicks like? I don't know. Shit like that. We get into it, man. So guys, everybody, I mean, this is just the scope of this album is so fucking out there and tremendous. And you know, he worked on it for years. So pick it up. I mean, pick it up. It'll be expensive just because, but not even that. I think, what, $15, $20? 34 fucking tracks. And you're not just going to laugh. You're also going to learn something about the world. So for sure, get that right now on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you guys got whatever. I have made it to Miami. I did Phoenix. Here's the part of winter that kills me in New York. It's the fucking now. It's March where it should be over. So I escaped. I'm in Miami, Florida right now. I've got gigs. I'm going to spring training with Paul Morrissey. I'm driving to Tampa tomorrow. And then driving back to Miami for the Thursday show. And then driving up to West Palm for Friday and Saturday shows. The Improv. Tickets at AriTheGreat.com. Then Vegas next week. I'm staying out of the last pitch of the cold. And then I get back to L.A. in April. I've got Toronto April 6th. The Danforth, second show added, first show sold out. AriTheGreat.com for tickets. After that, I think I'm just going to enjoy the springtime of New York, man. Enjoy the weather. Hopefully we'll have a Cleavage Day episode. But anyway, just a quick story. Where else am I going to be, by the way? Coming up, just get tickets. Cleveland, Columbus, Calgary. Where else am I missing? Oh, Seattle and Portland for sure at the end of April. Check those out, 26th and 27th. Portland, 26th. Seattle, 27th at the Neptune in Seattle. And Portland, I forget. But get tickets now. That's almost gone. And I don't know if I'm going to add a second show because I got a big driving to do. So just fucking get on it and get those tickets for Portland for sure. Can I drive from Portland to Seattle? Anyway. So... now, I'm going to tell you the story about how I missed my flight. But I'm going to start it with, this helps me believe in karma, first of all, because I wasn't rude to anybody the whole way. And I mean, okay, everything was going my way. Granted, all of this is based on the idea that, yes, Ari, you left 49 minutes later than you wanted to. Which, that's why I missed the flight. That's why I missed it. But it didn't have to be because of that. Started with the fucking Lyft driver. Okay? He was fine. He was great. From Yemen. Fucking talked to him for a while. Oh, was that guy from Yemen? Yeah, he said it's not nearly as bad as the news makes it out. He goes, the fighting's in the mountains. Anyway, I don't like doing this for fucking Lyft and Uber drivers, but I'm like, hey, dude, it looks like a lot of red up there on your map thing. Can you look and see if there's another direction? He goes, oh, this is the way that Uber or Lyft tells me to go. I'm like, yeah, I know that. But like, can you open up Waze or some other thing and see? Opened it up. He goes, oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Shave 9 minutes. 9 minutes. Key minutes. I mean, I'm sweating. I'm missing it. Diaz called me. I was like, I got to call you back, man. I can't concentrate. Shave 9 minutes. We're getting there. Checked in on my phone, you know. I mean, ahead of time. And then we're moving, dude. I get to the front. I check in and get my ticket right there, run, and then I start asking people, can I go ahead of you? My flight, it leaves. The doors close in 12 minutes. People are like, yes. Oh, I asked, okay, so I asked the fucking TSA people. They're like, well, you're going to ask people ahead of you. I'm like, don't you have anything for this? Can you just bring me to the front? Look where my flight is. I got to ask people ahead of you, sir. So I did. I'm moving. Broken arm, I'm moving. Can I go ahead of you? Yep, sure. Hey, excuse me, do you mind if I go ahead of you? Yep, sure. Hey, I'm sorry, my flight leaves in 10 minutes. Do you mind if I go ahead? One cunt, only one cunt. This couple. The dude was like, yeah, my flight boards in 15 minutes. I know how it is. I'm like, yeah, I do get that. Mine closes the door in 10 minutes. So please. And he was like, yeah, okay. If not for that cunt, I would have gone ahead of this family. And that's where it all went wrong. Two kids or three kids or six kids, I don't know. They're out of control. They put all their shit on the fucking conveyor belt. I throw my shit in. I mean, I transferred it in the car. took my belt off. Everything's gone. I don't have the fucking luxury this time of fighting the TSA on my shoes. I just kept them on. Fuck, I hate that. But I had no time. I mean, the flight now, it's boarding in 7 minutes. 6 minutes. Not boarding. Excuse me. Closing the doors 10 minutes before boarding. This is a 4:30 flight. This was 4:14. Get there. Move. Get through the security. Okay. There, no pat down. Sometimes my fucking dingleberry from my goddamn vasectomy goes off. Well, this is odd. Yeah, I know. It is odd. I'm a single guy. Dude, I fucking hate doing this when people are watching me. Anyway. Oh, people sleep on the beach. It's so fucking nice. Anyway, get through. Then, where's my bag? Where's my fucking bag? The fucking knapsack is there. Where's the duffel bag? It's off to the side. So I just appeal to a guy, human to human. I'm like, hey man, my flight leaves in 5 minutes. They are shutting the doors. Is there any way you could look at this bag real quick? He just looked at me with an air of... You ever see Rogan's bit about how deers will chew on the grass? Like, oh, what's the wording you use? It's so fucking good. Chewing the grass non-committally? No, that's not it. While you get fucking eaten to death by cannibals? I forget. But that's how he looked at me. Just couldn't care less. Just, what is this human talking to some human? Oh, I guess that human's me he's talking to. No, sir. Gotta do an order. Please, is there any way? I'm gonna miss my flight. Please. Sorry, sir. And then he starts talking to the lady who's supposed to check the bags. Like, guys, please move. And they're like, okay. I mean, she could not have been in less of a rush. There is no slow like airport slow. So she's checking these people's bags. Finally gets to me. I'm like, come on. I almost ran. If the gate, it was gate one, D1. But it was all the way at the end. Started with 10. I ran to see, can't run back. My bag's still not ready. And I'm like, please. And then she's like talking to her. Yeah, why did you? No, you got a clock. I'm like, I gotta go. She's like, sir, when it's time. And then she starts yapping with her friend, with her coworker. Look, I get it. You don't want to be rushed by people. But when someone's actually rushing you, opens up my bag. Anything sharp or fragile in here? Go. She pulls out a microphone. Pulls out a mic. And she picked it up, looked at it real quick, and then put it right back in. She goes, yeah, okay. My mic doesn't go off usually. That's a brand new thing. Zipped up the bag, ran for the gate. Jumped through the side. I was like, sir, the line starts here. I fucking jumped right underneath it. Is that a manatee right there? Sorry, sir. It's closed. 4:22. 2 minutes. No, I didn't yell at the TSA agent. I didn't yell at the lady who said, sorry, sir, it's closed. I just put my head down and I caught my breath. 4:22. I know it's not the TSA guy's fault, but the fact is they don't do anything. They don't catch any bombs. Everyone who's tried to commit a terrorist act since 9/11 has gotten right on the plane. They don't catch 95% of bombs. And what's the difference? If you got nothing to hide, what's the difference? The difference is I didn't make my flight to Phoenix. So there's another flight at 9:30. They put me on that one. But as a reward for my karma, for not yelling at anybody, the TSA guy, the Delta people, I didn't yell at anyone. I was like, yeah, okay. Do you know what I could do? I was almost dead, but I didn't. Didn't yell at the Uber driver. Didn't yell at traffic. My reward was, well, I went in to get my computer. Like, I guess I'll fuck around the computer. And what do I have there? One of Sam's edibles. The 50 milligram hashish. It's going to be a good day. So I just watched YouTube videos. I found this thing called Dark Simpsons. This guy re-edits a bunch of Simpsons. It's hilarious. Dude, sometimes editors are fucking great. Re-edited a bunch of Simpsons to make new stories. Dark stories, too. About, like... Yeah, we keep moving. About, like, Bart getting molested. about like all sorts of stuff. It's good. He just re-edits from lots of different episodes. Takes sound. Oh, you should watch it. Dark Simpson. It's on YouTube. Anyway, I just had a good time and I laughed and I enjoyed myself. So karma sort of worked out for me in the end. Got to Phoenix, went to sleep. Not a nice hike the next day. That's it, you guys. Let's start the episode, right? This episode is brought to you by Delta. Delta Airlines, you'll know why. They are going to come through for Tom Rhodes. I can feel it. Free advertising for Delta because you're going to come through for Tom Rhodes. Diamond status. It's worth it. They are loyal to their most loyal customers. I believe in you, Delta. I believe you have the power to do what's right. Be loyal to your most loyal customers. Be loyal to Tom Rhodes. Delta and Delta.com. The something partners serving you in the sky with that one redhead chick who did the, you know, preview stuff. All right, should we start the episode? Have I said anywhere else I'm going to be? I think I got everything, right? Get tickets right now. Miami, West Palm, Vegas with the guys. Short sets there. That's March Madness weekend. Toronto, Portland, at the Aladdin, Seattle, the Neptune. You can avoid the service charges in Seattle by going and buying it straight from the... look on my website, arishafir.com, and you'll see on the thing. I'll tell you where to go. There's like... The service charges are fucking greedy on that one. So get it from the box office if you can't afford it. If you do, then if you can't afford it... I did my best, you guys, to fucking fight those, but... Seattle's a city I lose in. Calgary, I don't know where else. Okay, you guys, let's start the episode. Ari Shaffir Skeptic, episode 351. Around the world tonight. Just around the world. Around the world with Tom Rhodes starts now. Oh, there's Baskin Robbins. It all worked out. Let me take you on a trip around the world and back. Okay, I'm here. Casa de Rhodes. Noted Zionist Tom Rhodes.
The last time I saw you, you had your major conversion to Christianity.
Oh, yeah. I was
you were overwhelmed by the most sacred place in all of Christianity, right?
Is that the most sacred place?
Yeah. You know, my I was home at Christmas, and my oldest brother,
yeah,
Dave, who's a huge Jesus freak.
Jesus fan.
He was telling me, the most sacred place in Christianity is where Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount. And I said, no. The most sacred place in Christianity is where Jesus was crucified and died for our sins.
Probably, that's where
And then
became...
I showed him, I pulled up my Instagram and I showed him the picture of the Dome of the Rock.
Yeah.
Dome of the Rock is where...
Yeah, what's...
In Jerusalem.
Yeah, no, I know what it is.
You got the flat platform. That is where Abraham almost sacrificed his favorite child, Isaac. It's where Jesus gave the Sermon of the Mount, and it's where the prophet Muhammad ascended to heaven. So
they all have the same pretty much spot.
On that same spot where the Dome of the Rock is. So... I told my brother Dave, if that is the most sacred place in Christianity, Christians are not allowed to go there. So it's not the most sacred place in Christianity. And I think that there's no...
Wait, hold on. Sorry, let me get my head around that. If it's the most sacred place, then Christians are not allowed to go?
No, if it was the most sacred place in Christianity, Christians would be allowed to go there.
Oh, right.
But Christians are not... Non-Jewish people are not allowed to... I don't forget what the name of the mosque is, what Muslims call it, the Al-Shaday.
I don't know.
Something like that.
We never went. But you can go around it, right? Or like in, but not in the part?
I don't think Jewish people can go on the top. Christians can go up on the round. Maybe Jews can.
I know it started the Intifada. The last one was, I think, Netanyahu or one of those guys was like, I'm going. It's part of Israel. I'm going. And then they were like, fuck you. And then the rage just like
I remember that.
Boiled over.
And I think there's probably no more proof of God being an asshole than him putting three of the most sacred places of the three major religions of the world in the exact same,
spot
where a fucking rock was.
Where people don't get along, really.
Yeah. I mean, if God was really a benevolent God who loved us all and wanted us all to be happy, he would have put the Jewish capital in the Caribbean. The Muslim capital would have been in Hawaii.
Yeah.
The Christian capital would have been in Southeast Asia. We could have all enjoyed visiting each other's holy lands.
Yeah, but maybe he was thinking like, no, these are all my children. I want them to come together. I want them to come home for the holidays so they can all visit and be friendly. And then like, damn, you guys just not get along. I'm giving God the benefit of the doubt for once, which I rarely do.
That was really nice of you.
Yeah, thanks.
Because I think I might be a little more godly than I'm not religious at all.
Are you not? So your mom is.
My family are the hugest Jesus freaks in the world. And it can be, I don't want to say irritating, but it's like this constant quoting of scripture. They say grace before meals, even in restaurants.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be a little lengthy, shall we say?
Yeah.
I think if I don't mind.
The Jewish grace before meals is like a quick, like, you're good.
But I'll tell you, the one thing going to Jerusalem did for me, it made me appreciate our lack of history in the United States. Our history is George Washington slept here, Marilyn Monroe blew a guy there. You know, no one's going to stab you to death over something that happened last week.
Oh, no
20
way.
Years ago, 50 years ago, 200 years ago.
Yeah, no way.
So I it made me really appreciate our lack
of history. That's cool. That's like, it was never a selling point, but you're right. No one's getting angry about it.
You know, how old are our Pizza Huts?
That is one of the tourist spots.
That's our archaeology only goes back, you know, to fucking Arrowhead.
If you go to Seattle, like, this is the original Starbucks. Everyone's like, ooh, and the lines around the block. One's mad about it.
I really like that now.
Yeah.
No one from Pete's Coffee is going to be rolling up and machine gunning anybody in front of fucking Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's all about Pete. Right. DeRossi's have a bit about it, how everyone's talking about Europe is so much better. He goes, they have this in Europe. He goes, yeah, you know what we don't have in America? Ruins. Yeah, you've been everywhere, dude.
I've been everywhere, man.
Your collection of fridge magnets. That's one of the things I try to like collect from like each country.
Yeah. I'll bring down the box.
Wow.
Of all of them. That's probably 20% what you see there.
Yeah, I mean, you filled up a wall.
Yeah, when I got this apartment, and the motherfucking refrigerator is stainless steel. It doesn't hold a magnet.
That's why they're not on the fridge.
That's why they're not on the fridge.
You got some good ones, though, bro. So this album you're making, just because, well, I guess let's just talk about it. You've been a guy, I quote you a lot, a few things.
What do you say?
One time, I mean, the way you've just been traveling, of the comics, people look at me sometimes like, oh, you're a traveler, but it's like,
people put you and I up there in the same class.
Yeah,
because,
but it's not close. It's not close. It's only because we're past most of them. We're like, oh, you go somewhere else other than America? You guys must be the same. I'll compare it to this. They asked Eric Clapton. They're like, what's it like to be the best guitarist in the world? He goes, ask Prince. I don't know.
So you're saying I'm Prince and you're Eric Clapton? I love you for that, Art.
Yeah.
You know, you're already one of my favorite best friends, and now you've really sealed it. You know,
you got that Prince record right there. You go everywhere. And the one quote I remember from Moon Tower a long time ago, I think we might have been doing a podcast or just hanging out.
We did the podcast in Moon Tower.
And somebody comes over. I have no memory of who. Like, how you been, Tom? Where you living now? And you just go, in these shoes, brother. I was like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Not in any place. You just would go from spot to spot.
Well, that was why I didn't live anywhere for 10 years.
No home.
No home. I put everything into storage.
Yeah.
After I lived in it, I put everything in storage when I moved to Amsterdam for 5 years. And I didn't have that much stuff, to be honest with you. And then after Amsterdam, I lived in L.A. for 2 years. And I was paying rent on an apartment I was never at. And I looked around and I thought, you know, what am I protecting? It's my empire of $20 purchases. And I put everything into storage. But that time, I got rid of the furniture. gave it to comedians. Hey, man, you need a TV. You need a fucking couch. You need a coffee table.
You know
table.
They do.
And they did.
Nobody
all these
poorer
comedian
than
friends
comedians.
Of mine. So I really whittled it down to my book collection, my vinyl record collection, my CDs, personal family photos, and career stuff. So I had everything in storage in Anaheim because it's cheaper.
Oh, that's just where the storage facility was?
It's yeah. cheaper to get a place down there than it is in Hollywood. And my father lived in Anaheim at the time. So what I did was I kept my California driver's license on my dad's address in Anaheim. I had my credit cards on my dad's address. I would leave him a stack of signed checks and a bunch of stamps.
Yeah.
And when my credit card bills came in, he would just fill in the number. I'd sign all the checks. He'd fill in the number and just fucking pay wow. my bills for me. And then my father was killed by a drunk driver in 2009. And then I had to change everything over to my mom's address. But I would do every year, those 10 years not living anywhere, I would do 3 or 4 months a year in Europe doing gigs. I would do a month in Asia, month in Australia. 1 year, 2013, I spent a month in New Zealand doing that comedy festival.
But what did you go around like where you're like, oh, Australia, the Sydney Festival, the festival season's right then? Let me like, I'm going to Australia again.
Yeah, I didn't do the – I only did the Sydney Festival once, but I did the Comedy Store in Sydney a lot. So
good
I would
room.
Go there. It was one of my favorite rooms.
Yeah, real good room.
And my Sydney track on the new album is recorded there.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second.
But then also there would be 5 or 6 months all over the United States and Canada. And, of course, there would be breaks and there would be off weeks. And my wife, Ashna, traveled with me for 8 of those years. And when we had an off week,
yeah.
4 years in a row, after I finished a European run of gigs, we went to Rome and rented an apartment for a week or two.
On the tail end of a European
tour. On the tail end of a European tour.
Yeah.
So 4 years in a row, we went to Rome. With Airbnb now,
Airbnb.
It's great. You can live wherever you want. And because I wasn't living anywhere, we could live everywhere. So after a month of gigs in Asia, we went to Bali for a couple weeks, rented an apartment when I was still drinking.
Which side of Bali? Where'd you go in Bali?
We started out in, what's it called? North of Kuta, because Kuta is the tourist.
Seminyak. Yeah.
Thank you. Stayed in Seminyak. But I've been to Bali like 5 times. I've stayed all over the island. Ubud, everybody's
yeah.
crazy about, but I don't think that I've never stayed there.
Oh, right. I wonder what it'd be like to stay. I just like that monkey temple.
Yeah, the monkey temple's pretty awesome.
Yeah, but like I wonder how that touristy part, Kuta, I guess, is like, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
Too much of like, hey, boss, ride? Boss,
yeah.
You want to ride?
I hate the hard sell.
Oh, my God.
And in Jerusalem, there was a lot of hard sells going on.
You can't, you walk down that shuk. The souk, whatever they call
yeah.
it. And it's like, if you glance, you're fucked. You know what I mean? If
yeah.
you just want to look like, oh, that's a pretty light. You know, and he's like, I have no interest in buying it. But they're like, hey, come on in. We have this. And I'm like, I know, I see it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have it.
What I thought was the funniest in Jerusalem, I posted a picture of it on Instagram. They had some of those tourist shops were selling the Crown of Thorns replica.
What?
So, didn't see that?
Uh-uh.
$5. So like when you go to Disney World, you can buy the Mickey Mouse ears and walk around and pretend you're Mickey Mouse. In Jerusalem, you can buy the Crown of Thorns and walk around with a bloody forehead and pretend you're Jesus
on his last
day of living.
A suffering thing.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
Fucking hilarious. So when I was still drinking, we used to go to New Orleans a lot. Got a lot of good friends in New Orleans. And it was pretty cool on the off... And then when we would come to L.A., we would rent an Airbnb at Venice Beach. So it was cool not living anywhere for 10 years.
Airbnb does free up a thing of, like, if you're going to be somewhere more than 2 or 3 days, you know? It does free up, like, I don't have to be where hotels are. I can be in whatever neighborhood I want.
Yeah.
You know? Not, like, around where people travel. Like, by the airport, there's always hotels. But I want to stay by the fucking airport.
Yeah.
You know, I want to stay somewhere cool. Brooklyn, you know? There's no hotels there. But you can, like, still stay there. It's fucking... It really opened everything up.
So it was, you know, it was a great adventure to do that for 10 years. And then it was pretty beautiful to get everything out of storage and see what I've been holding on to for all these years. So I've been living here for 3 years now.
Yeah.
And my wife just moved out a couple days ago, and I'm getting divorced.
Congratulations.
Thanks,
new chapter.
Man. Yeah. So, you know, everything for so many years was, oh, one day we're going to have a place. It's going to be great. We'll be able to take it to the next level as artists.
Would you do that? Would you like be saying, like, at some point we're going to, like, pull up chocks and, like, hold up somewhere?
Get a home.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
you did, and it didn't work out. Fuck.
Well, I mean, and I still stayed on the road. I was obsessed with my Delta Diamond level status, and I was on the road too much the last 2 years, and that is partially what helped the demise of my marriage.
Yeah. Did you try to, I mean, yeah. Did you try to get yourself gigs in places you wanted to? I asked my friend, you know Danny Lucas, the sound guy at the Comedy Store? Used to be in the band called the Zeros.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Cool, like part of the punk scene and metal scene in L.A. for a while. But I asked him once about lyrics, and he goes, do singers like write the lyrics and then the music around it, or the music and then, and I think it's both ways, but I think it's generally they write the music first and then they try to write lyrics to put that in there for that. Were you traveling to places so that you could go there and then finding gigs afterwards, or were you like, oh, there's a gig here, I guess I'll go to this place?
No, I don't understand, like, comedians that'll do that. Or a lot of young comedians. I mean, if you're young and you have the resources and you can do this, like, hey, I'll go to Berlin for a month.
Yeah.
And do open mic nights.
Oh, that.
No, I never went anywhere. I mean, unless it was, like I explained about, you know, my breaks. Like, Rome, I've never done a gig in Rome. Been to Buenos Aires a few times. I've only learned recently about a gig that pays very little money, but
and then that would make you go to the place like that. At least, I mean, if let's
no,
say
no,
paid
so them. I would book gigs,
yeah,
in all these places before I went,
yeah.
And 2 years ago, I had the idea for this album, to do an album where every track is a different city around the world.
It's such a cool idea. Let's go into it just for a second.
Yeah. So, So 2 years, so it was a couple of things that kept me traveling hardcore internationally. And it was the idea for this album.
Yeah.
And the fact that I needed 125,000 miles every year to hit diamond status on
really?
Delta Airlines. Yeah.
What do you get with diamond status? The massages?
You get to use the first class lounge every time you fly.
Big. Yeah.
You get to board the plane with first class.
You'd be like, I'm one of you, and then like back to the back. Like, that's right.
You get two free checked bags.
Okay, those are big.
75 pounds each.
Oh, that's huge for you, especially when you had all your shit. You weren't ever doing just
carry-on. No, it's huge on it. It's huge because one of my hobbies when I travel is I like to go to used bookstores. So like if I was in England or Ireland especially, and in Galway is one of my favorite bookstores. It's called Charlie Burns. So I could spend 100 euros on books, but that's going to add 20 pounds to my luggage.
Yeah.
At Diamond, who gives a fuck?
Right.
Checking in with a 68-pound bag. Hey, babe.
Let's
throw some dumbbells in there.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of nice perks. And then if you need to change a ticket at the last minute, there's no penalty fees.
They treat you like a human.
You could cancel a flight 24 hours in advance. There's a lot of perks to Diamond. But here's the thing. So I was obsessed with this album. So
you knew about it 2 years in advance. You started thinking about it.
This album, yeah. Been working on it for 2 years. And like earlier last year, I needed Shanghai, Beijing, and Mongolia. So I booked those gigs. I had done Mongolia before. It's a great club. I highly suggest you going to do this gig.
I sure want to go to Mongolia.
They're fucking awesome. The club is awesome. It's a proper.
Is that in the capital?
Ulaanbaatar is the capital. It's a proper comedy club. Seats 200 people.
Whoa.
And the comedians there are obsessed with comedy. They bent over backwards to show me a good time. So I went there in October 2017, and it was in the 30s. It was only like 3 months of nice weather. And so I wanted to go back in summer and see what it's like when the weather is nice. So I went in August 2018. Wanted to get the tracks for my album and everything. And then also, I wanted to see Mongolia.
When you could go out.
I rode horses. I held a vulture. You can go eagle hunting. I shot arrows. We went 3 hours out into the countryside, and I stayed at Genghis Khan's 13th century campsite in a round gur tent, one of those little white tents. Damn. That these nomadic people. I drank fermented mare's milk.
Fermented what?
Mare's milk. It's
horse
milk. I stopped drinking alcohol 5 years ago, but I wanted to sip it because it was Genghis Khan's favorite drink, and it tastes like if you poured a shot of scotch into a glass of milk. It's fucking disgusting. Yeah, but
that's awesome. I heard this thing on NPR about Ulaanbaatar and how super, I mean, it wasn't kind. It was super polluted it was, and how the sewage system was not really set up very well. And then they said like 95% of the whole country of Mongolia lives in that town.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I want to go to Mongolia.
It's awesome. And so the guys who run the gig, hey, Bata, hey, Zolo. I know they'll listen to this. They're huge fans of yours.
Oh, I want,
they listen
want
to all the podcasts. They watch comedy specials like University Education. They are versed in Pryor, Bill Hicks, Carlin. These guys, comedy's their life. They want to perform around the world, so they know they can't do that in Mongolian. I mean, they'll go to London or Switzerland, places where there are Mongolian people, but they want to, so once a week they have an English language night where the Mongolian comedians perform in English.
And they force themselves to try it in English.
So they can develop in English. And like the audience, when I was there the last time, sold out, 200 people. It was one French woman, one Australian guy, and one American guy.
And the rest Mongolian?
The rest were Mongolian who speak English.
Key. That's so key.
Yeah.
My problem with some of the Asian markets, like when you play them, is that people are like, what is the crowd like? Like, it's expats. I'm playing to Irish and Italians and Americans and Canadians.
Mostly, but like in China, it'll be half, like China and Japan, it'll be half expats and half Japanese or Chinese.
Oh, I didn't find that in China at all.
Oh.
In Hong Kong, sure, but like not in China. In Shanghai and Beijing, it was like just expats for me.
Okay.
Bangkok was a little more like 50-50.
Yeah.
So it was like cool.
Okay.
Oh, that's great that you got people, English speakers from China. So, but there it was all Mongolian. So you really get what it's like to play to a Mongolian crowd.
Yeah. And especially, you know, so with my album, it's something that I've done, and it's what I like. I admit I'm addicted to traveling.
Yeah.
And I'm addicted to these world gigs. And so it's the greatest adrenaline rush high for me to go to these different countries. You know, like when you're in Ireland, stuff that works in Ireland is different than what works in England.
It's crazy.
And
the little differences.
It's different than what works in Holland and France.
You do an abortion joke and they're like, it's not legal here. You're like, oh, what?
Yeah.
You come to it from a different place.
So when you, so when you're over there and you're doing like 1 week in Ireland, 1 week in England, 1 week in Holland, 1 week in France, the adjustment for me is one of the greatest adrenaline rushed highs that I know of. So I've been doing the international circuits for 20 years. So there's a lot of places that I already have stories and material worked out for, like France and Holland and England.
Oh, you're talking about specific bits?
I'm talking about material.
And for so this that is, place?
Yes.
Not like your bits like kind of pigeonholed in.
No.
You mean like, here's a bit about this the route or whatever
stories
in Paris.
That happened to me. I lived in Amsterdam for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
The first love of my life was with a French woman from Paris. We lived together in San Francisco for 7 years. So the very
is that
first
the scuba diving girl, woman.
No. That's a different story.
Okay.
That's a different story.
Yeah.
So The first time I went to Paris, I was maced. Some guys tried to rob me. I've got a lot of great stories, but also I'm obsessed with the French writers. Voltaire's one of my all-time heroes in life. So this is the point that I'm making. So when I go to a different country, like in Asia or wherever, I'll always try and write at least like 5 minutes on that country. Cool. So my album, it's primarily jokes and stories about those places.
Whoa.
And this was the point that I was trying to make when we brought this up with Mongolia. The Mongolian audience loses their mind if you have gone to the trouble of learning anything about their country. So I read Genghis Khan's biography before I went over. So I had all these great jokes about Genghis Khan. And I learned as a comedian performing in Mongolia, because I read Genghis Khan's biography, that you never give up on a joke, never give up on a story. And if that doesn't work, you can always put aristocrats and noblemen into catapults and shoot them against the palace walls, because that never fails to make the Mongolians laugh. So, like, I wrote all this great material for all these different cities. And then, like, it's been a great writing project for me. I mean, this was the...
Have you done some of these bits a few times in these places?
Like, in some of the countries, but like Berlin, I had not been to Berlin in 10 years.
I just went for the first time.
So,
damn, it's great.
Everything I wrote for Berlin was brand new. And, you know, like, I've wanted to do this comedy travel show for years where, like, I'm the Anthony Bourdain of comedy. I mean, you know, it probably would be smart for you and I to do this show together. But, like, that's basically it. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, finding out what's funny in different countries, what are comedians making jokes about in those countries, what do people laugh at. But to give you an example of how I like to look up information before I go to a country and write, you know, like, I'll Google shit. And so here's a line that I wrote for Berlin, that Germany has actually done a lot of beautiful, great things for the world. My country is going backwards right now on human evolution, but Germany is pushing the human race forward. An example, in Germany, university education is free for every citizen because education is a basic human right, according to the German Constitution. In Germany, it is not illegal to escape from prison because the German Constitution recognizes every human being is born with a desire to be free.
Whoa.
So if you're in prison in Germany and you try to escape and you get caught, you don't get punished.
You don't get tagged on.
You don't get extra time tagged on. They just put you back in your cage because they understand your desire to be free. Of course you want to
get out. Everybody would want to get out.
But here's the mind-blowing part.
That's really cool.
In Germany, not only is prostitution legal, the German government funds prostitute visits for disabled people.
What?
The German government is concerned about the self-esteem and orgasms of disabled people. Isn't that beautiful?
That is beautiful.
So if you're ever in prison in Germany and you're trying to escape, and you fall off a fifth-story building, and you're paralyzed for life, you can find reassurance that the German government will find a way for you to squirt and have an orgasm if they have anything to say about it. So, like, that's a bit that I wrote for Berlin.
Yeah.
And that's on the Berlin track.
So these tracks, 40 of them.
Yeah.
Jesus. Are really...
The album is 3 hours long.
Because I didn't... When you told me about this at the Church of the Sepulchre... I thought it was just like bits done other places, but these are really like travelogues.
Yeah.
Like joke and versions of travelogues.
Yeah. Like, and, I almost drowned in Thailand once.
Where? With the gillies?
That's the story you were asking about the French woman.
Yeah. Oh, that was in Thailand.
That was in Thailand where I almost drowned.
Yeah.
On Koh Phi Phi. So that story is on, is on the Thailand, track. So all these different stories, like I lived in Amsterdam, I had this bike wreck once when I was doing this television show, my face was mangled. You know, there it's a lot of my life and my traveling the world. You know, and then the end, you know, the last two tracks are Tel Aviv and Jerusalem.
That's the last two tracks.
Yeah.
Center of the universe, really.
Starts in, can I read you the tracks?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. This is so cool. So the album is going to be, just so everybody knows, it's a three-hour-long album.
And it's the greatest thing I've ever done. It cost me my marriage.
Yeah.
And I should, the greatest fucking punchline
yeah.
is that this past year, I flew more miles on Delta Airlines than I ever have in my life. 155,621 miles. That's more than I have ever flown.
What's the circumference of the Earth if you travel around
the equator?
It's got to be less than that.
I spent more money with Delta Airlines than I ever have in my life. I spent $13,000 with Delta, but they changed the rules. It used to be you only needed 125,000 miles to hit Diamond.
Yeah.
So last year they changed it. You need 125,000 miles sitting in the seat.
What?
But you also needed to spend $15,000. So guess what? My marriage ended over this, and I'm not going to hit fucking,
oh, fucking
Diamond.
What? How much did you spend going 155,000 miles?
I spent 13,000.
Are you kidding, Delta?
Delta Airlines can go fuck themselves.
No, they'll step up.
I'm not going to hit Diamond.
You got to hit Diamond. That's crazy. I don't accept that.
Yeah, I don't accept it either. And you sit on Delta and they show the video. What's his name?
They changed it. You have to spend $15,000.
Ed Bastian, the fucking CEO, president of Delta. And we appreciate your loyalty. And every one of us here at Delta Airlines, they give you that fucking thing.
Yeah.
Ed Bastian, I hope you hear this. Because I was more loyal to Delta Airlines than I was to my marriage.
They should make it, like once you're already a Diamond, they should be like, okay, this year you only got to spend 70,000 miles.
So now, when you see me boarding Delta Airlines and I'm in zone 3, I want you to point at me and laugh at me. Because I fucking invested everything in this and I didn't get it.
Wow.
Thanks, Delta.
They're going to change. Just start a campaign. Everybody tweet at Delta and say, you got to help Tom out.
You got to make Tom Rhodes Diamond level.
You got to make him Diamond level. It costs his marriage. And it's not like he got like 25 miles. You still got 150,000
miles. 155,000
miles. But you didn't spend the right amount? BS.
Yeah. Well, and
they'll step up. They'll step up. I believe in the fact that when people find out that there's a wrong, that they'll correct it.
I think Delta Airlines has really screwed me. And I've been their greatest promoter.
They're going to change, man. I can feel it. Everyone's going to tweet at them and saying, you got to put
Please
Tom.
Please tweet at Delta Airlines that it's a criminal act
it really
by
is.
Delta Airlines.
It's amoral.
If Tom Rhodes is not Diamond level after spending $13,000 and flying 621
miles. It's not going to stand. Can I read some of these tracks?
Yeah, so these are the tracks.
Okay.
So like I said, there's...
Are you going to keep them in this order?
Yeah. Okay. But like I said, so there's going to be three London tracks, three Hong Kong, and two Ulaanbaatar.
Dude, isn't Hong Kong one of the coolest? Well, okay, let's go.
Okay,
let's
so read the, this is the track listing.
Paris is 1, 2, 3. How many times have you been to Paris?
I've been going to Paris 25 years. I've performed there. I try and go every year. Paris is my favorite city. And if I get a shitload of money.
Yeah.
I would buy a place in Paris. That's how much I love it.
Who do you perform for to Paris? Parisians or expats?
Well, that's the thing. I've done these gigs, mostly bar gigs for expatriates. And then Gad Elmaleh, he started this monthly comedy gig last year. They did it once a month at this beautiful theater called Théâtre La Ouvre.
Okay.
Which is the Ouvre.
The Louvre, yeah.
Yeah. Not Louvre, like your Ouvre, like your work of art for your body of work. Your Ouvre.
Okay.
It's a beautiful theater, seats 350 people, and it was 90% French people, and that's where I recorded these tracks.
Whoa.
So there, it's more like, instead of an expat club thing, those first three tracks are great. I tell my history with Paris and all my stuff about, Voltaire and this album is actually like a university education for a world traveler and the most important knowledge nuggets that you should know about every place.
Voltaire has one of my favorite quotes when I was still religious about God. So the world embarrasses me, and I cannot imagine that there is a watch without a watchmaker.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Voltaire said that God is a comedian performing in front of an audience too afraid to laugh. But here's the best. On his deathbed, all these religious priests came to Voltaire's deathbed, and they said, "Do you renounce Satan?" And he said, "This is no time to be making enemies."
That's funny. Yeah, Paris is your favorite. That's great.
Love Paris. So that's actually this beautiful theater, and so it's great. So the audience is beautiful. It's like applause breaks and
wow. Was Gad there doing that?
No, and well, he has since stopped doing that gig.
Why?
I don't know why.
It's good to record these so he cannot steal them. Wow, three tracks in Paris, about Paris. That's fucking rad. That's one of the places that obviously I want to go.
You never been to Paris?
No. So let me ask you a question. Here's what people always say. When you go to another country, it's so fucking annoying. They just go, wherever. What's France like? And it's such a broad question that it's unanswerable.
It's almost like different than the city.
Yeah.
And then different parts of the city are. Well, you know, you go to some areas and it's like being in North Africa. You go to some areas, it's like being in the Middle East. You go to some areas and I find I'm a huge Francophile, and that's what I say on the album. I think on one of those Paris tracks, I say I think it's the stupidest thing in the world when Americans say they hate France or French people.
Yeah,
France gave the world the bikini and lingerie. What's not to like? And if it wasn't for the French naval blockade at the Battle of Yorktown, the United States never would have gained its independence from England.
Oh, yeah, they really helped us.
And the Marquis who arranged that naval battle was named Lafayette. And that is why when the United States Army, soldiers, military landed in France for World War I, the American government sent a message to the French government that simply said, "Lafayette, we are here."
Oh.
So, like, there's all kinds of, there's not only great jokes and stories on this album, there's like a university education of valuable information. So like that is on I think Paris track 3.
Okay, so let me ask you this then, because this is what, when people like, when they do ask like, what was whatever like, it's like, I mean, are you talking about the temperature? Like if they say, what's LA like? You're like, I could, there's so many different ways I could answer that question. Tons of good weed. Is that what you're asking me? Like, yeah, you can just pull over and go to a weed shop. Oh, good hikes in town, you know, vapid people. Like, what, you know, whatever you want to, like, it's, so I will say when they're like, what do you like doing? So like, if they could tell me Chiang Mai, what's Chiang Mai like? I'd be like, oh, here's what you should do. There's a Chiang Mai jazz club on the North Wall and check out a kickboxing fight, a Thai boxing fight.
Well, I mean, I'm obsessed with.
What's the to do in Paris that you're like, oh,
okay,
this coffee shop is wonderful.
Well, I mean, I have historical obsessions, and one of them is the French Revolution. So when I was there October, I had a small group of friends with me. And I had done a walking tour, a literary walking tour of Paris that I paid for Ashna and I to take. It was a fucking $100 each. And the woman sucked. Oh. I knew more than she did. So, and then we took a walking tour of the French Revolution. And that woman was a historian. And she was amazing. So a few days later, I had a small group of friends in Paris. And I took them on the Tom Rhodes walking tour of Paris. I think my wife filmed it on the phone, and I think they're on my YouTube channel. And it was all these historical and literary places of Paris that I find fascinating, and they're stories that I think people should know. So there's all kinds of spots like that if you know your history. But the thing to do in Paris, I've kissed 4 different women at the top of the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, wow.
And I married the last one. It's my litmus test. But the Eiffel Tower has changed. It used to be, 20 years ago, when I would go to Paris and I was drunk, I'd jump into a taxi and have them drive me to the Eiffel Tower, and I'd go like lie underneath it and look up and have the taxi waiting and shit. I've done so many things in Paris, but after the terrorist attacks of a few years ago, not Charlie Hebdo, the other one.
Concert.
Charlie Hebdo was 4 years ago. So yeah, the concert, the Bataclan attack. Now there's security everywhere. And unfortunately, they put a tin fence around the Eiffel Tower basin, and you have to go through a security check like going through the airport before you can get in to the bottom area, and then there's a long line to go up to the top of it. So I say skip the Eiffel Tower. Here's my tip. Here's my tip for Paris.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, I discovered, no, less than that, 2 or 3 years ago, I discovered Rue Montagoy. The oldest patisserie in Paris is called Storer, Storer. I follow them on Instagram. Bill, it's been there since 1750. This is where they make the pastries and fruit tarts and things like that. They do the most incredible sandwiches in the daytime. I always tell people, when you go there, get two sandwiches. So an hour later, when you're walking around and you say to yourself, fuck, I wish I'd have bought a second sandwich. You've already got it, because Tom Rhodes told you to fucking do this. But so Rue Montagoy is, so you can find Rue Montagoy if you find Storer. And I follow it on
it's on
Rue Montagoy.
Okay.
So just remember Storer, Storer. I follow them on Instagram, and I follow their main chef on Instagram. It's just pastries and fucking exquisiteness. That street is a pedestrian walking street, and it's one of the best food streets in Paris. There are 3 cheese shops. There's 2 meat shops. There's a wine shop. You have Storer for your patisseries and sweets. But, you know, and then there's a proper grocery store and all that. So after I did my walking tour with my friends in Paris, I took them to Rue Montagoy and said, everybody, let's spend a half hour, go up and down this street, get everybody, oh my God, oh, and there's 4 boulangeries that sell the fucking baguettes. The French baguette.
It's the best.
What we call French bread in the United States is just a fucking long stick of white bread. It's not the same. Oh. And in Paris, the baguettes cost $1.10, $1.20. So when I'm in Paris, I am nibbling on baguettes constantly. You could follow the breadcrumbs and find me. So I told everybody, okay, you spend a half hour. There's wine. There's baguettes. There's cheese. There's, you know, we'll meet back in front of Storer in a half hour, 45 minutes, whatever you guys need. So everybody went and got everything they needed, bottles of wine for a picnic. And so we all got these big bags of food. And then we took the metro. You have to take the... So from there, you would take the metro back to Odeon. And from Odeon, it's not a metro train. It's a different train, but your metro ticket works for this other train that goes straight to the Eiffel Tower. And you go to the Eiffel Tower an hour before the sunset. And there's all these big lawns all around the Eiffel Tower. And you go out there with a group of friends or your lover or whoever. And you have a picnic an hour before the sun goes down. The light is perfect. It's beautiful. Fuck going to the top of the Eiffel Tower. Go to the lawn with everything you enjoy eating in life with your favorite human beings. And then after the sunset, the wonderful lights on the Eiffel Tower appear, and it is absolutely stunning. And it is one of the best things to do in Paris, is to go to Rue Montagoy, get all the favorite foods, and then go watch the sunset over the Eiffel Tower.
Good fucking tip.
That's
what
Rhodes
I'm talking
tip.
About.
Yeah. And you can...
What's this album going to be called? Around the World?
It's going to be called Around the World.
Oh, man. That's
it's the best thing I've ever done, Ari.
Yeah, you think
and
so?
I couldn't be prouder of the jokes. And then also there's kind of the story. I've left in some of the, like, it's funny, like on the London tracks.
Yeah.
I was at the Soho Theater in London, and Ashna was sitting right next to my recorder. So you can hear
her,
my wife, laughing. And then it's through the course of the album, you know, my marriage is falling apart. And then at the very end of it, I'm in Jerusalem with my mom. You know, like I told the story when I was in high school. I told this on the, this is on the last track, on the Jerusalem track, that, you know, I talked about bringing my Jesus freak mother to Jerusalem. I don't know if heaven exists, but if it does, surely bringing your Jesus freak mother to Jerusalem will get me a couple miles. I'll be into the fucking, yeah. I'm going to get into the heaven. Delta Airlines is not fucking renewing the diamond status of a guy who took his Jesus freak mother to Jerusalem. Fuck you, Delta Airlines.
Delta.
You heartless capitalists.
No, I'm telling you, they're going to change.
What about the
they're
human level? Delta? What about the fucking human level? Okay, so check it out. So I told the story on the Jerusalem track how when I was 16 years old, I was dumped by my high school sweetheart.
Yeah.
And my mother and I walked around Lake Charm in Oviedo, Florida, hundreds of times until I felt better. And then here I am 35 years later, walking along the Mediterranean Sea in Tel Aviv with my mother, having this exact same moment. And I realized at that moment that my mother is the love of my life.
Oh.
So, like, aside from all these great travel jokes, there's kind of this story of my marriage.
Redemption and moving on.
Ending weaved through the bit. So it's funny. You can actually hear my wife laughing on the London tracks.
And then laughter goes away by the end. It's like it's notably absent.
You know who's not going to sponsor this album? Delta Airlines.
No, they're going to. I'm telling you, man. I believe in the... Listen, bureaucracy happens. People don't see individual cases. When they find out about this individual case, I'm positive that they're going to step up. And they're going to be like, oh, yeah, oversight on our part. We just didn't know.
Well, you know, you're Bert Kreischer is, he's an American Airlines guy. So Bert? When I've done Bert's podcast, I've actually argued with him. Not argued.
My American sucks.
Yeah.
They're the worst.
American used to be my airline.
Me too.
Until they merged with U.S. Air. U.S. Air is the fucking worst airline.
Yeah.
And then they started treating people like animals.
Yeah.
After they merged with U.S. Air. That is the exact moment that I moved to Delta.
Mm.
And now, in my opinion, because Delta is doing tiered economy now.
Ugh, lame.
Delta is, they're looking for ways to fucking extract money from everyone at every level, and even their most loyal customers.
They're like, nah.
They're, like they made it even harder to hit diamond. Like, Delta is more concerned now with shaving a little bit more profit from every fucking level. And if Delta does not consider me one of their most elite travelers,
then what do they think of me? What do they think of normal people who just travel once in a while? Yeah. I remember American calling me when I switched off, and they're like, hey, we noticed you used to travel with us a lot. Now you don't at all. What's going on? I was like, well, I got these like upgrade points, but you would never upgrade me. So they were like worthless.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, maybe you're leaving from like major airports. Like you live in, where do you live? I'm like, New York and LA. They're like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to Indianapolis. I'm going back from that. And they're like, oh, I don't know. What else? And I'm like, the bathrooms aren't big enough. And she was like, how tall are you? I'm like, 6'3". She goes, well, that's pretty tall. I'm like, it's not the right answer, man. Like, I'm not fitting in your bathroom. I have to crouch to piss.
Well, if Delta downgrades me,
they're not going to.
I think it's time I found a new airline. And like I was saying,
United's
the one
everyone talks
about. As a comedian going on all these different podcasts, like comedians, we talk about travel. It's what we do. And so, like Bert, who's Mr. Pro American, and he thinks that's the best airline. I have been. If you listen to all of the episodes of his podcast I've done and other ones I've done, I am the greatest ambassador for Delta fucking Airlines, and they are about to fuck me like I was a dollar sign.
Bert just likes American because they give out extra snacks. You went to Amsterdam.
I lived in Amsterdam for 5 years.
This must have been like your homecoming travel thing. Like,
yeah.
You ever hear the term home road club?
Yeah.
You know, this seems like your home road city.
Yeah, well, Tumler is where...
Road city.
where I recorded... It's the oldest best club in Amsterdam. And so much of my life changed in that room. I first fell in love with a girl that was a waitress there. And that's why I moved to Amsterdam.
That's why you moved. And then you got a job on TV there?
And then that girl dumped me.
Yeah.
After I lived there for 2 years, and I was mostly doing the European circuits. And in that same club, Tumler, this network had an audition for a late-night talk show. And I did it with, like, 10 other comedians. I think they did two nights of auditioning comedians. They looked at all these comedians, and they saw me and said, that's our guy.
A non-Dutch
person.
Dutch, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So... a lot of great things happened for me in that room, Tumler, which I think is one of the greatest names for a comedy club ever. It's a Jewish Yiddish word, and it means traveling merrymaker.
Oh.
Back in the old days of European Jewish ghettos, there were Tumlers that would travel from ghetto to ghetto, and they had jokes, and they had funny songs, and they were traveling merrymakers. They were Tumlers.
Oh.
So I think that's what we are.
Yeah.
We're Tumlers.
We are, traveling merrymakers.
Maybe Delta doesn't like me because I'm Jewish.
You're not Jewish.
I'm not Jewish. I'm kidding.
I did that room, I think on your recommendation actually.
Probably.
Yeah, we did guest spots there, or just a little show, me and Paul Morrissey. But like, what was I going to say about Amsterdam? I guess my memory of Amsterdam... and I've said this on a special, actually, on adulthood version of my last special. Next to the Anne Frank house is this little coffee shop, and they have the best grilled cheese sandwich I've ever had in my life. And you got to go there.
It's the Toasties.
Yeah, but it's a grilled cheese sandwich.
But they call them Toasties there.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
They call the grilled cheese their Toasties. Okay. It's like a really Dutch thing. They do it with cheese, or they do it with ham and cheese. They're incredible.
Yeah, I think it's like ham and cheese, multiple kinds of cheese.
It's
it was
the fucking
so good.
Greatest
and I
thing
tell
ever.
Everybody, like, go to the Anne Frank. Just go to the left if you're facing it, and then it's like down two steps. I went this time when I was there. I went too late, and it was fucking closed, and I'm really pissed.
My favorite place in Amsterdam is called Soup and Zoe. There's two locations.
Yeah.
There's one very close to the Rembrandt house. And that one you can sit down in.
Right.
And then there's another one off on Spiegelstraat, but that's only to go. And it is a soup place, and every day they have 10 or 15 different types of soups, and you can sample them.
Oh.
You can go in and go, could I try the Moroccan chickpea soup, please? And then they'll give you a little cup of it, and you sip it. And living in Amsterdam made me addicted to soup because it's like
so cold.
Cold and rainy and shitty weather for most of the year, and there's nothing better in winter than sticking your face over a hot bowl of soup.
Yeah.
And these people, the way we approach comedy is how they approach soup. They are they're obsessed with it. They try and add artistry to it, and then they change with the seasons. So every day is 10 different soups. You know, in winter you'll have, you know, like, you know, the Dutch pea soup or erte. I forget how you say it, but it's pea soup with sausage. It's always good.
Ooh, that sounds good. Were you into weed when you were in Amsterdam?
Yes.
You were?
Yeah.
The coffee shops. I'm so... the idea that you can get weed is like... that's, living in LA for long enough, that doesn't matter to me. You know? I'm like, I can get weed. I can pull over here and just buy whatever. But the place to hang and how, to me, everyone... it's just based on playlists. Like, they play old reggae here. They play techno here. They play classic rock here. It's like, they're just cool bars where you can sit and read a book. Maybe talk to it to your neighbor. If you see like, oh, what are you reading? That's you just get into discussions over some usually spliffs, fucking Europeans. It's just a nice, cool feature of a city.
Yeah, my favorite ones closed because I lived, when I was doing the television show, I lived on Lange Leidse Dwarstraat. And on that street was this place called the Rokerai. I think they had two or three other locations. And this place, the guy had like, it was just like wooden Buddhist carvings from India and Thailand on the walls and like kind of Arabic pillows and couches to lounge on. They had the best music. It was the most cozy hazelik.
What was it?
Hazelik is the Dutch word they say cannot be translated into English, and it is the word that most sums up everything about Dutch culture. You'll hear Dutch people, like if they come to your house for dinner or if you go somewhere to a club, they'll go, oh, this is very hazelik. Hazelik means a cozy place that you are in no hurry to leave. That is what I think the closest definition. They say, oh, there's no English translation for this, for hazelik, but it's a cozy place. You are in no hurry to leave.
That's those weed shops. They really are. You're not going there like, quickly get some weed and go. It's like, I mean, you could do that, but
you
like,
hang out.
Just chill here, man.
Will you talk for a minute while I urinate?
Yeah, absolutely. I might do that afterwards. Amsterdam was super fun. My first time I went there with Paul Morrissey, and that's where we came up with this idea, Paul did, of like, let's go to two new countries every year. Two new countries. That was, I mean, my first year in New York. So that was like 6 years ago, and I've managed to do it. Two new that I've never been to countries every year. And Amsterdam was just so fun. We went to the Bulls, where they make all that liquor tour. They give you a couple glasses of Bulls at the end. The Van Gogh Museum. And then just went around. Jessica Michelle was there, and she went to a live sex show. We were like, nah, but I fucking regret not doing that. You only regret shit you don't do. It's really true. If you do something and it's lame, it's like, you know, whatever, it was lame, you don't think about it. But if you don't, and you even if it was going to be lame, you just left with this feeling of like, oh, that would have been cool. And Amsterdam was like a lot of fun. And when I went this time, I didn't go back to that cheese place. Dude, you should have seen me at that grilled cheese place outside. All these people were coming out of the Anne Frank house, all distraught. And I was standing next to that grilled cheese place, same distraught, going like, oh,
yeah,
it's close. Like just as emotional as these people.
It's a day killer, man. And, you know, before I went to Israel, I live across the street from the Holocaust Museum here in L.A. I'd never been. And it's phenomenally done.
It's a downer.
But, oh my God, you know, it's fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's your day is ruined. Yeah. I was in Nanjing, China about 5 or 6 years ago. And
the
I had
walled
always.
Walled City? Is that Nanjing? Or is that Nanking? The Walled City?
Nanking. That's okay. They pronounce it Nanjing.
Okay.
But it looks like Nanking. I had always heard about. You know, you hear about the rape of Nanking,
and
they had their own Holocaust there. The Japanese killed, I don't know, however many. I got there at like 3 in the afternoon. My gig was like at 8. The place closed at 5. So like I threw my bags at the hotel. I ran to this thing. I was not prepared at the heinous atrocities the Japanese had done to the Chinese there.
Yeah.
Bayonetting babies and fucking just the most horrendous shit you could imagine. I mean, even worse. I'm not even going to go into it. I don't want to bum people out. So then I had to go do a gig.
Oh.
And I was like so... I mean, we're artists. We're sensitive people to begin with. But I was just... I was wrecked. And that's like when you go to the Anne Frank house, when you go to the Holocaust Museum, you got to be prepared the rest of your day you're going to... really be disheartened with the human race.
It's not the best idea to go before a comedy. That's an after a comedy show gig thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Antwerp, I heard when I was there last time, they're like, oh, Antwerp's the cooler city.
Antwerp is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of Brussels. And
Brussels is boring.
But Brussels is boring. And I think Antwerp is probably one of the best kept secrets in Europe and the world. It is so charming. And you know, so they speak Flemish, which is Dutch, basically. So it's kind of like Holland, but you'll never meet an arrogant Belgian person.
Mm.
Belgians are all very humble, very sweet people. I say the Belgians are like Dutch people with low self-esteem. And you know, I don't drink anymore, but the beers are phenomenal. Some like the Trappist beers are made by monks.
Yeah.
You can only get those in Belgium.
Well, they don't make enough to export them.
You don't make enough to export it.
Yeah, you want to be like, I've never heard of this one. It's like, yeah, that means get it.
Yeah, and like, some of them like Kwak comes with its own kind of cup, like a glass with a wooden handle thing. And like Whoa. Two of those and you're ready for surgery.
Dude, those 8%ers.
Yeah.
They're crazy, those Belgian beers.
No, they're even more. Like, I'm telling you, you're ready for surgery after wow. a couple of those.
My favorite beer is Delirium Tremens in the world. I love it. It's a Belgian, but it's like 8.5%. You drink two and you're like, why am I wrecked? You're like, yeah, because you just had five. It's the same equivalent. Where's Porto?
Portugal.
Oh. That's on my list.
You're reading my track list.
Yeah.
You're going to love this. I think you.
I really think
you
I'm going to love
You above everybody,
it.
You're going to love this album.
I mean, I thought it was just a cool idea. Like, whenever people do albums or CDs, they're looking for, a lot of times, they're looking for like a cool tweak. Like, oh, that'll be cool to be like, say I filmed it in so-and-so.
Yeah.
But really, it didn't affect
the material.
The material. It's yeah. just like a side thing. A couple examples, exceptions is Ali Sadiq going, filming in a prison. And he has a long history of being in prisons.
Right.
And so the material goes with.
And I have a long history of traveling the world.
Yeah, exactly. And the material goes with that. And this is like perfect. I thought it was just going to be like same material about You're, George yeah. Bush, but in London.
No.
And like, oh.
No.
Wow, this is amazing. No. I'm really going to love this. Around
now,
the world.
Antwerpen is a Dutch Flemish word, and it means hand throw. On, mm-hmm. hand. Twerpen, throw.
What is that?
This is, I do the bit on the thing. It's the. In, you go to the main square in the center of Antwerp, there is a statue of a little boy throwing a giant's hand. And that's where the city gets its name from.
From the statue?
Because of the giant.
What?
Once upon a time,
yeah.
that has never been recorded in European history, there was a giant that was menacing Belgium. And ships couldn't get into port. And commerce was ruined. But there was a brave little boy. And he cut off the giant's hand and he threw it. And that's where the city gets its name from. Antwerpen means hand throw.
Where do you think that's from?
It's a mythological story. But, and so in the main square is a statue of a little boy throwing a giant's hand.
Why do you have to throw it? Cutting it off is fine. It's not like he's going to throw it.
Well, so
back
I
on.
Won't do the bit for you. But oh. then, and then also, Hoboken, New Jersey, gets its name from Hoboken, which is a suburban area outside of Antwerp.
Yeah.
And Hoboken means, oh shit, I dropped my sandwich. A little boy dropped his sandwich in the river. And that's what Hoboken means. So it's very funny. So I talk about the, I won't go into the stories and the jokes and stuff, but so I mean, like, there's really, really valuable information.
When you were doing these, so like Paris is track 1, 2, 3, Amsterdam's 4, 5, Antwerp 6, 7, you know, was there a thought to, should I put all the Parises together or should I split them up?
I did that. And yeah, then I thought, you know, if a 10-minute bit
yeah.
will be played less than a 5 or a 3-minute bit.
Right.
So that's why I broke Paris. And then it's like I'm kind of talking about three different things.
No, but I mean, like, was there any thought to do like Paris 1, Amsterdam 2, Antwerp, and then Paris 18? And
that's
then
how
Paris
it started.
22.
Each city was a different track. And then
going back,
I've been editing it, and so I've listened to the whole album,
yeah,
like 20 times in the last month. Well, we've been editing it for like the last 3 months. I've been sending him all the tracks, and I sent the notes and everything. So the original idea was each city was a thing, and then I thought, well, you know, to do a 10-minute track probably isn't that smart for it to be played on Sirius XM and
yeah.
things like that.
I mean, you really moved to... No, I didn't mean like splitting them up. I mean not splitting them up like in different parts of the album. Like go Paris, then Amsterdam, Oslo, Stockholm, then Paris again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. I think yeah, this is... that's the great thing about... it's like now, my marriage is ending.
Split up to, like, continents, too.
My marriage is ending, and then, now I got to write a whole new hour. Mm. And then, my thought that I keep in my head is, well, that's why we got into this to begin with.
Because you like writing.
And what a great
blessing.
Place in life to be. Oh, great. That's how you need to look at this. Yeah. I get to come up with a whole new hour now.
Yeah.
Which is great. Instead of being like, oh man, I can't do the material that I had.
But do you remember when you were an open micer? San Francisco? Where were you?
Orlando.
And it was like, the week ended. You did your bits for the week. And then it's like you're going back to the same open mic. And it's like, let me write another 4-minute
bit. That excitement is what you need to keep your whole career.
Yeah.
Of like, and that's the, and I always try and tell open micers this, that freshness that you have where you're looking for a joke everywhere is what you should be excited about.
Yeah.
And you should never lose that.
Yeah. When they say like going into shitty situations, let's say I hate weddings, like I go to a wedding or something like that. And people go like, well, at least you'll get material out of it. I'm like, no, don't enter into shitty situations just for material.
Right.
But if you have to be in one, if your flight gets canceled, now you got to take a fucking 40-hour boat to get to wherever you're going. Don't try to do that, but if that's what you're stuck with, there is a blessing part of it too. You will get some material out of it.
Yeah.
You're entering, finishing this awesome album. Oh, man, I can't wait to hear it.
So that's what I was going to say.
And then
so
being
like
divorced
the,
and new.
You know, like, so we dreamed when we were young comedians of coming up with new hours and making albums and everything. And I'm telling you, this is the greatest thing I've ever done. It's... I put so much effort into it, but it's also fun to like go to different countries. And why just do your regular act? If you go to a different country and then they see you've specifically written material for that place, they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He's not just some guy reciting his fucking act. He put in an effort. And like I was trying to say before, is for me, that's the most exciting thing, to find out what works in different countries, but also to like, to come up with
a new
with new shit for that place.
I heard a comic. I forget. It was early when I was starting. It might have been either Brett Leake or Jack Johansson.
I love Brett Leake. Yeah. Jeez, you don't hear his name too much anymore.
He died.
Did he die?
Yeah, but that degenerative disease he had. I think he passed away. But one of the two of them, him or Johansson. What's his name? I just said the tall one.
Brett Leake or.
What am I?
John,
where is it gone from my head? He did Letterman like 80 times.
Oh, Jake Johansson.
One of them, two of them, said every city you go, it's like try to write one new bit, you know, through the week. Just 5 minutes of your 45 to 60. Do something new. Make it fun for yourself.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, because you know when you got a new joke. Like two or three jokes before, you're already getting excited about it.
Here it comes.
And then having one new bit makes all the other jokes fresh for some reason.
When you center under that, I want to ask you about this in terms of travel. I went with my dad for his 80th birthday. We took him to Costa Rica.
Nice.
We were going to take him back to Romania to visit where he grew up.
Oh, is your dad from Romania?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But he didn't want to go. He was like, he talked to a historian. He goes, dude, since you've been there, there have been two massive wars. You were not going to recognize anything.
That's funny thing about being the children of immigrant parents. Like my mother was from Argentina. Oh. And my mother had not been back in 40 years. So 10 years ago, I took my mother back to Argentina. And it was great. She got to see some cousins that she hadn't seen forever. And then... She has no desire to go back whatsoever.
Wow.
And she said, it took a lot for us to leave that place. She doesn't want to, for me, for years, I was like, oh, I want to be in touch with my roots.
Yeah, I'm part Argentinian.
I'm half Argentinian.
Yeah.
And so it was a big thing for me to take my mom. Obviously, I love my mom. I've done a lot of nice things for her. But I thought that was a big cold, wet fish slap in the face to realize that she didn't look at it the way I did. She's like, I don't want to fucking go to that place.
Wow. Yeah, my dad was like, what am I going to do in Romania? I'm like, I don't know, drink a beer that you would have had if you had never been driven out by the Nazis or see where you're... I don't know. But the more I said it, I was like, fuck this. I'm going to Romania. It sounds actually awesome.
Yeah.
But so we didn't do that. We went to Costa Rica. He wanted to go hiking and stuff. But me and my sister went from New York, met them. They came from like Maryland, you know?
Yeah.
And when I got off the plane, you exit the airport and you're... So when I travel enough, same as you probably, I don't like do a bunch of research. Like, I'm about to go to this. I just came from a place.
I do.
You do still.
I do. That's how I come up with the jokes.
Oh, yeah.
So like, you know, like in October, I was like... I was in Berlin for 3 days, and then I had to go to Oslo for a week, and then Stockholm for a week. So it was really interesting. So like, I like put all this focus on Germany, and then I had been in Oslo last year, so like I already had some ideas about things I knew about Oslo, like Norwegians are racist against Swedish people. So yeah. I got to do a big story about that. But then like I was only in Sweden for 2 days. And I was really nervous. Oh, I need this Stockholm track.
Oh, right.
So I landed, and I had to instantly... I mean, I was researching shit on my last day in Oslo for Stockholm. And then I flew there, and then, I mean, I was writing jokes for Stockholm right up until I went on stage.
Wow.
You know?
And are some of these jokes about, like, not just, like, the history of a place, but, like, your experience? Like, everybody was rude to me here. Or, like, I guess the one in Thailand and Koh Phi Phi was, like...
Yeah, my stories.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was saying about me doing the international circuits for 20 years. Like, Paris and Amsterdam, I've got personal stories about. London, I have personal stories about. There's a lot of places like that. But then other places, there's, you know, where I didn't have... personal experience. I came up with, you know, with jokes or, you know, knowledge nuggets, important pieces of information that you should know about the place. Like the German thing about the, I wrote that on the afternoon of my show. And I'm pretty proud of that fucking joke.
Damn.
You know?
So what I was going to say is you get out of the elevator, out of the airport, and I breathe like sunshine and it just, this feeling hits me. I don't know if you get it, too, of like, oh, I'm in Costa Rica. I'm in another fucking country. Because airports look similar.
Yeah.
There's like three different kinds. Big,
small,
middle.
I don't have any desire to go to Costa Rica. Romania, I would like to go to.
Yeah.
The women are stunning.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm single now.
Have you ever been? Yeah.
No. I never thought I would be single ever again. So.
You weren't even planning for shit.
No.
Now you're like, oh.
What a kind of a gift to have for the rest of my life. And, you know.
My brother told me that one of his coworkers was going to Ibiza. And they have a new boss who's like real stodgy and like conservative. And the boss was like, what are you going to Ibiza for? He goes, you know, sunshine, a beach and stuff. And then he goes to afterwards. My brother goes, what do you think I'm going to? I'm going to fuck chicks. That's why does anybody go to Ibiza? You know, but I can't tell that to him.
Yeah. Apparently, Ibiza is not that cool of a place to go to anymore.
I think it's been taken over by
it. That's always the thing. Like, a place will peak.
Once you hear about it, it's not the thing anymore.
I should have bought property in San Francisco when I lived there. I didn't have the money.
Right.
I should have bought property in Amsterdam when I lived there. I didn't have the money.
We met a guy on Lombok in Indonesia, one island over, or maybe a couple from Bali. And there was this Australian guy who bought a place there 25 years ago, saying Bali's getting kind of... overrun. I'm having trouble finding waves, you know, instead of pushing people off. So I went to Lombok, where no one knew about, had all the waves I wanted. I think the first and fourth best served places in the world are on Lombok. And he goes, great. Now people are coming. He goes, now I'm struggling for fucking waves again. He goes, on the other hand, my property is worth 175 times what it was.
Yeah.
Because it's more popular. So it's like, you got to find these places before people talk about
it. Find the places before they become hot.
Yeah.
You know? That's why I think somewhere like Antwerp will eventually get found out.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like so sleepy and charming, and it's, you have an ancient city center like Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Those same kind of structures, and it's so charming and wonderful to walk around the downtown. I'd like to explore. I had never been to Portugal before. And
I want to go there for a music festival. I heard they have these great music festivals.
I tell
festivals.
You, that comedy festival... in Porto.
Yeah.
It was the first year the guy put it on. He's a comedian, big fan of mine.
What time of the year?
I think he's going to do it. I did it in October. I think he's going to move it to the first week of November. I know he'd love to have you.
I would love to go. I'm trying to think of going in the summer for that thing, but I'd probably go back too because Portugal just seems fucking cool. I got to piss.
Well, then I'll talk, and and you piss.
Okay.
So where did we leave off the album? We okay.
Antwerp, and then we got to Porto.
We got to Porto. So Portugal.
Three cities in Ireland?
Yeah, man. I got Dublin, Galway, and Belfast. And Dublin is an awesome place. Galway is my favorite place in Ireland. Yeah, the... they do a comedy festival the last week of October every year there. You should definitely do that, Ari. And Ireland is great because everybody likes to laugh a lot and drink a lot. So if you like to drink heavily and you like to laugh a lot, go to Ireland. And everyone in Ireland is hilarious. If to me, it's hilarious that they import comedians to Ireland and... I'm thankful because Ireland has been really good to me in my career. I've performed in Ireland once a year for the last 20 years. But I think it's funny that they import comedians because everyone in Ireland is hilarious.
Do you think it's just they're used to the Irish sense of humor and they want some other type of stuff?
I don't know. They're just and like if you're not a world traveler and you want to like kind of put your toes in the shallow end of the pool, so to speak.
Yeah.
People always ask me, I'm not a traveler, but where should I go? Go to Ireland. It's safe.
It's foreign enough.
It's the food is incredible. I don't
Galway's right by Cliffs of Moher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's an hour and a half drive.
Which are like, I just went and I'm like, God, I love nature shit.
Galway is another place if I was swimming in cash, I would buy a place. It's a small university town. It's a mini San Francisco university seaport, and there's music jumping out at you everywhere. You walk down, you know, the pubs all have great bands. It's kind of a mini Nashville, too. And then on the main pedestrian shopping street are excellent street musicians. If you were in Ireland and you were gay or artistic, you would move to Galway. That's how I always describe it.
That makes sense. Yeah. I like the dip your toe in places. To me, for Asia, it's Thailand. Bangkok and Chiang Mai, where it's like, I want to go somewhere super foreign. It's like, it's set up for you.
Or somewhere where you're guaranteed a good time.
Right. But if you go to Cambodia, maybe who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. And a lot of people are missing limbs in Cambodia. There were so many mines and everything.
Oh, yeah. Ireland is cool. It was so much fun. I drove around this year just like... I went from Galway area from Cliffs of Moher, and I said, I'm going to drive to Dublin. It's a 3-hour drive, and I made it like an 8. I was like, I'm taking all side roads.
Yeah, smart.
It's gorgeous.
And around Galway is where they filmed The Quiet Man, John Wayne's best film. Yeah. But the guy that puts on the gigs there, Kevin Healy, he owns Roshan Dub, which is the oldest classic rock club of Ireland, where U2 and everybody, the Pogues, Sinead O'Connor, anyone who's anyone in Irish history music played there. Fortunately, he loves stand-up comedy. And I've been playing for that guy for 20 years. I go there once a year. And then in Dublin, the Laughter Lounge in Dublin is great, but for the Dublin track, last summer I did the Dublin Comedy Festival in Ivy Gardens. And they were in the shows were in these big tents. That's a phenomenal comedy festival. I don't know if you've
Dublin?
Ever, Never the, been I don't know if you've one. Ever done the Dublin Festival. Uh-uh. Really great.
I got invited to, I guess, the Dublin Festival. I guess I got invited to that.
That's it.
And I was like, maybe 2 years, because I'm not probably going to go back to Europe this year. But like,
you should do it.
Mm-hmm. I want to. Festivals are cool, too, because then there's less pressure on you to draw. It's not about you.
Yeah, and then you get to see people that you don't normally get to hang out with.
There's
You know, like you, at any comedy festival, you know, you got, you know, the best Irish, English, Australian, American, Canadian, people from around the world. And that's usually when a headliner gets to hang out with other headliners.
Yeah. And then you can like, chill, like, what are you doing tomorrow? You want to go check out this fucking statue somewhere?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, okay. Shit you might not do by yourself, but since other comics, you're like, for sure, let's do that. Let's do a scotch tasting. Okay, absolutely.
Yeah. On like the Galway track, I got to pay homage. My religion is comedy, and my political party is comedy.
Okay.
And two of the prophets of my religion are Mark Twain and Oscar Wilde. So I got to, anyway, I won't go into the thing, but it is a really great Oscar Wilde hunk
on the
track. And then Bram Stoker was from Ireland. Bram Stoker wrote Dracula. Bram Stoker and Mark Twain were really good friends.
Really?
I read a Mark Twain biography recently, and not only were they good friends, Bram Stoker got Mark Twain his first gigs in London theaters. Bram Stoker.
As a speaker?
As a speaker. I think Mark Twain was the first stand-up comedian. Oscar Wilde would have been, but his was on paper. It wasn't. He didn't do performances like Mark Twain gave live. He called it platform speaking.
Who called it that?
Mark Twain. And he fucking hated it.
Did he really?
There's a great book you should read.
Did he really?
It's about Mark Twain's world tour. There it is. It's right over your head. Chasing the Last Laugh by Richard Zacks. Everybody who loves comedy should read that book. And it's about his worldwide comedy tour that he did after he was financially bankrupt and ruined. And he did it to... and he went all over the world. He went to Jerusalem. Hated it.
Bukowski hated public speaking, too.
Yeah.
He thought that poetry shouldn't be recited. It should be just read over and over again. You can't get anything from a poem hearing it one time. And he goes, all these fucking poets of his time were like fucking sellouts. And he'd rather work in a post office and not sell out. So they did.
Bukowski's Live at Redondo Beach, otherwise known as Hostage, is one of my favorite recordings.
Really?
I listened to it. where is it? It's right here somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, there's a university education in this new album that I'm...
That's so fucking cool. Where's it going to be available, just so people know?
I'm not happy with the artwork with the album cover at the moment. So I wanted it to come out in the next couple of weeks. It'll be out in the next couple of weeks or...
No, I'll release this when it's out. So don't worry about that.
Okay, great.
It's out now.
It's out now then.
Yeah.
Okay.
But awesome. Like where... iTunes and shit?
iTunes.
Okay.
Primarily. And then I'm going to make a batch of probably 1,000 vinyl records.
You got to get good artwork for
it's going to be a box set. Yeah, if it's 3 hours
like
long,
Encomium, right?
It's going to be a box set. So it's going to be like, so it's funny, like most people release a box set of their entire career's work.
Mm-hmm.
This album is going to be... a fucking box set.
That'd be cool for a record.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this has never been done before.
The artwork can be... I'm just imagining all the different ways you could go with Around the World as the album title. The artwork could be so... I mean, I don't know. I'm just like... This shit's popping in my head.
I've reached out to like 5 different artist friends I know, and they've... the submissions have all come in this week. And I haven't seen anything that made me go, that's my album cover. Right. So I might have to just go with a photo or something, but okay. So let's
get going. Yeah.
So after Porto is Dublin, Galway, Belfast, and then there's 3 London tracks.
Right.
Berlin.
London's a cool town. Yeah.
Yeah.
London's a cool town. I like it there for sure.
I love London. I haven't been since 2014. That's the oldest track on the album. Recorded at the Soho Theater in London. All the rest of them, all the other tracks were done in 2017, 2018.
Okay.
That's the oldest track on the album.
And what year is that, the oldest track?
2014.
Okay.
I did the Galway Festival with Reginald D. Hunter in October, a great old friend of mine. He asked me to open for his UK tour for all of May and June. And I'm going to be staying in London the whole time. And
this coming tour?
Yeah.
Oh.
So,
dude, that's great place to be based with income coming in.
Yeah, and I'm going to be doing gorgeous theaters all over England.
You're going to get Airbnb for that time?
No. I'll be staying with Reg in London for 2 months.
Wow.
So it's great. I haven't been there in a few years.
In when? May?
May and June.
Oh, what a great time,
too.
It'll be warm.
Awesome.
Get some sunshine.
Yeah. And then we're also going to do Scotland and Ireland. Yeah.
My only problem with London is almost everywhere, there's no good alleys to smoke weed in. Every time you go down an alley, it's a bar, and people are out there with like suits and ties on.
Yeah.
Berlin, I just went to, and it's one of my favorite cities now.
Okay, this is funny thing about Berlin. I had been to Berlin twice before.
Yeah.
The last time I was in Berlin was 10 years ago. When I went to Berlin years ago, I couldn't get the war out of my head. I'm walking around Berlin and I'm looking at young German guys and I'm picturing them in fucking SS uniforms and shit. And I'm thinking, yeah, you look like, you know, Jew killers or whatever. Like,
wow,
and I just couldn't get the war out of my head.
And it's out of their head.
But now that my country has gone full Nazi, I could appreciate Berlin for the city that it was. And I had a lot more empathy and sympathy for the German people. And I loved it. And I stayed in this really cool area. There was great vintage clothing shops, great...
East Berlin, probably.
It's near where the remnants of the old of the Berlin Wall are, which is hilarious because right... a few blocks from here on Wilshire Boulevard is a bigger section of the Berlin Wall.
They pulled it here.
Than they have in Berlin at the place commemorating the Berlin Wall.
They have a few places that still have it up around the city. There's like different spots where they have it.
So that's one of the areas I stayed in. And the show was great.
Here's what I'm noticing about Berlin people. It's like, since I always thought Germany, Holocaust, but their bigger war had just ended in the 80s or early 90s. Like, they went from Holocaust to, especially that city, to a split communist capitalist city. And that just ended. So they're all coming off. The people that are like 30 now.
Reunification.
Reunification. And not the Holocaust. That's like two ago.
Well, I mean, they have great guilt about it. And they were properly shamed.
Right. It's done.
Which, this is a big discussion we could go into.
Sure.
That was not done to the American South after the Civil War.
What, the shaming them?
The shaming them for what they did. So that's why you have this rebirth of white supremacy in the United States, because these fucking people were not properly shamed. Okay, that's my little theory.
Possible. There's a rebirth of
anti-Semitism
in Germany.
One good thing that happened in Germany that people can learn from. Jesus, you know, when I played in Berlin, the place sat like, I think, 80 people. There was 10 Israelis out of the 80 people there. Loads of Israelis live in Berlin now.
It's such a hip town.
Yeah.
People there are doing things. They're doing arts, you know, or they're going to nightclubs at night. They're like living their lives. What I see now in America a lot is people really talking about what they're against, what they're not into. And they don't spend nearly enough time, for my taste, of pushing the shit they are into. I'm way into boating. Let me tell you about boating. It's like, all right, there's some passion there. Instead of like, these people do this or that guy's racist. And it's like, all right, well, then ignore them. And it seemed like in Berlin, no one was the Berlin that I saw for 3 days, obviously not a long time, was nobody was shitting on stuff they're not into. They were just promoting the shit they are into. And I loved it. It was so vibrant.
Yeah, man, it's like the art capital of Europe now.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe, I never associated Berlin with fashion. And in that area that I was at, I bought like some really cool clothes at the vintage stores. I found some cool vests for like 10 euros. And there was just cool shit happening everywhere.
Yeah, I loved it. I really am like, Michelle Wolf wrote me. He's like, how's the European tour? I was like, I think I might move to Berlin for like 6 months and try to write a new hour there or something. It's just, I'm sorry. I can't get over it. I love it. I fucking love it there. It's the best. When you get those cities, you're like, oh, I'm in with this city. You know?
I couldn't believe it. I was really, really impressed with Berlin.
Yeah.
And it was somewhere that was way down on my list.
Where are some of the other cities that you've gone to where you're like, oh, I'm about it now? whether or not you expected it.
I thought Portugal was pretty cool. I'd like to see the Azores, the islands off Portugal. Sevilla, Spain is amazing.
Sevilla.
But like I said, I'm a Francophile. All of France is incredible. Chamonix, up by the Swiss border. Switzerland is amazing.
My brother lives in Zurich.
Yeah. I was glad that I met you and your brother. We ran into each other at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
What a weird...
My mother enjoyed meeting your brother.
Yeah?
My mother really liked your brother.
What a cool... It was just such a weird thing. You come off and there's old artifacts and stuff, and then you like turn the corner, and then I'm like, that guy looks like... Wait, what? He just like had the same look at me, so it was like, what? How it doesn't make any sense. Fucking Rhodes is here.
Yeah, you were the last person I expected to run into, and I knew you were in Israel, but I didn't expect to run into you at the most sacred place in all of Christianity.
Yeah. It doesn't go with who I am.
Yeah. Oh, and it's funny. I told you that the Christian tradition when you go to, so in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. There's the spot where Jesus was crucified. I touched it three times. But then there's a slab stone, and it's where when they took Jesus' body off the cross, they cleaned his body. And the Christian tradition visiting Jerusalem is you buy a crucifix, and then you take it to the slab, and you put it on it, and you wait until the green light pops on the bottom, like charging up a phone.
Up. Yeah.
And it makes it a holy relic. When you put the cross on the... So I bought all of my Jesus Freak family these crucifixes, and I put them on the slab, prayed over it like you're supposed to do, and I got a neck pillow.
You got it for yourself.
I gave you the power of Jesus.
Did Simone love that present? What a good idea.
Yeah.
When I went out there with my brother, I was like, oh, and I passed all these like fridge magnets. I'm like, I'll get Steve Simone a fridge magnet from one of the super holy Jesus sites. And I told you that, and they're like, you could go that way, or you can get him a cross and put it on this slab, and it's like one of the coolest things you can do. I'm like, where can I get a cross? And you're like, fucking 8 feet any direction. There's 1,000 people selling crosses for that reason. I was like, oh, hell yes. Perfect gift. You ever get a great gift where you're like, yes,
that's
you're going
to
like that.
Gift. If you're going to Jerusalem and you know Christian people, because it's not just a cross. It's a cross that's been put on the slab
where they
took Jesus' body down.
There are people, there's women crying there, rubbing it.
Putting cloths on it, yeah.
Weeping, not just like a little bit, like bawling.
Yeah. It's emotional for a lot of the super faithful.
Yeah. We were talking about
to realize that is the spot where Jesus' life was snuffed out.
How mad would they be if you just jumped on there and started wiping your feet? Just like washing your fully washing
hurt.
With a washcloth with a stick.
You would be hurt.
Yeah, they wouldn't. They'd be like, "We're not turning the other cheek, buddy."
Yeah.
It was the fucking. It was surreal seeing you there. It was just like.
That was awesome. That was our last day before we flew back, and then it was really great to see you and tell you about my trip. And
yeah.
Your brother talked to my mom
for
lengthy.
A while. Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. Let's run through some of these, but mostly it's just like, I want to hear this album, but then it's
the
like,
greatest comedy album of all time.
Dude, I love when I hear somebody going like, I did great work.
This is great work.
Yeah.
And like, I've listened to the album like 20 times.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's 3 hours long. Every time I listen to it, I'm like, I can't believe how fucking great it is.
How much are you going to sell it for?
On iTunes, it'll be, like $19.99.
Okay. 3 hours is like,
yeah,
it couldn't be 10.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
It's fucking worth it. It's an all-time classic. And every time I listen to it, I'm like, I feel very proud of myself. And like I said, my marriage ended because of my obsession with this and my Delta Diamond status, but it may have been worth it.
Yeah,
I think it should be Grammy worthy.
I have a new idea about people with integrity, which you have for this album for sure. Of like, it's not always cost effective for your life, So you have to learn how to take pride in something other than cash or other than a wife or whatever. So I say, you got to take pride in the things you destroy to get where you're going. So we're like, wow, I blew that up. That I really loved. It's too bad that's gone. So it's like, you're saying like, this cost my wife. That's like, that's a big one. That's a really big one in order to be able to brag about.
Yeah.
To make something great.
Yeah. Well, like all the, you know, all those painters you read about and, you know, they let their lives go to shit. Everything was about the painting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Basel, Oslo.
Basel, Switzerland.
I loved
Oslo. Did you skip Zurich? I think you skipped Zurich.
Oh, Zurich. I thought we just got there because my brother. Yeah.
So Berlin, Zurich.
Yeah. Zurich, Basel. I like the fucking chocolate, obviously.
Yeah, I talked about going to the Charlie Chaplin house.
Mm.
Charlie Chaplin, it's in Vevey. One of the greatest days I ever spent in my life.
Yeah.
The Charlie Chaplin house and watching the sunset in his backyard in the Alps. And Charlie Chaplin, when he died, his body, his corpse, was ransomed.
Ransomed.
Two men, they found them later, two local mechanics in Vevey, dug up his dead body and ransomed his corpse to his family. How traumatic.
What?
The person you love the most in life has just died. You've just buried him. Your tears are still fucking wet in the cracks of your eyes.
Oh my God.
You get a call. Someone has stolen the body. And they had the body for like, I think, a week or two before they found them. So,
oh my God.
It just, you know, really makes the argument that you should pay your low-skilled workers more money.
Yeah. Basel school?
Basel, Switzerland is amazing. And I was there last December 2019, like a week before Christmas.
18.
A week before. No, this was 2017 when I was there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was snowed in there for two extra days. I didn't know I would make it home in time for Christmas.
Dude, I got rained into, these things are like other blessings. I got, was in Iceland and they're like heavy, heavy winds and they're like, planes aren't taking off. So I didn't have to be in Brighton for two more days. So I was just going to go to London a day early and then take the train to Brighton and back. But I was like, all right, I'm stuck in Iceland for another day. And I called my friend Ari Eljarn and I was like, could we go to a hot spring? And he goes, yeah, sure. And it's just like, awesome. It's just a bonus.
That's how
day.
I felt. Like there are worse places to be stranded than Basel, Switzerland.
You're not at the airport. You're in a great fucking cool city.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah.
There's snow everywhere. It was charming.
When you're a traveler and shit goes wrong for you, it's different than when you're trying to get somewhere.
Yeah.
You're already doing it. So when shit changes for you, it's like, cool, out of my control, here's what it is. Here's what's happening. You know? I went to, with me and Steve Simone, went to House of Nanking in San Francisco. And I was like, to the guy, he was like, how you doing? I was like, good, man, how are you? And I think he thought just because I was like, actually said, how are you? He was like, I'm going to take care of you guys. I'm going to bring you food. I was like, yeah, for sure. Bring us whatever you want. And it was like, you lose control and you have this amazing experience. Same shit with travel. Like, you're like, you're snowed in or that bus is no longer going. You're like, all right, I'm stuck in some tiny town in fucking Myanmar. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool you got snowed in there. Probably pretty, too.
Well, another, yeah. Another, I'll just tell you this real quick. Yeah. So, I bought a Tumi suitcase. Tumi is expensive.
Okay.
The suitcase was $1,000.
Jesus, dude.
Well, man, you know, you travel your
use
life.
It a lot, yeah.
And so my wife, I bought it like 3 years ago. My wife was adamantly against me spending that much money for a suitcase. You know, normally a good piece of luggage is $350, you know, $400, something like that, right? So the last couple of bags I had, Travel Pro. Are you listening, Delta Airlines? I know fucking travel, and you're scumbags if you lower me from fucking Diamond. So
back.
This is very important information. Travel Pro used to be a top quality piece of luggage. $350, $400 a bag would normally last me 5 years.
Okay.
For as much as I travel, I find that worth it. The last two Travel Pro bags I had, manufacturing quality went down, and the last two bags that I had from Travel Pro, one lasted me a year, the other one lasted a year and a half before zippers tore or the seams broke. Not acceptable.
I know.
So Tumi, I bought a very nice Tumi bag because I got a carry-on bag from Tumi, which is the greatest carry-on bag ever for a computer, and it's perfect. So I went for the big piece of luggage. It was a little over $1,000. My wife, Dutch, cheap, couldn't understand it. It's stupid to spend that much money for a piece of luggage. So the great thing that happened to me in Basel after I was snowed in, KLM is connected with Delta.
Good airline, KLM.
I love KLM.
Yeah.
So I flew KLM to Basel to Amsterdam and then Amsterdam back to the States. So on my flight from Basel to Amsterdam, the machine that they have collect the bag, whatever, ripped my luggage. You could see that it was like some kind of a mechanical prong because it's symmetrical, two rips in the fucking bag. Oh. So I kept the receipt for the bag. When I got to Amsterdam, I made a claim with KLM. European travel rights, the passengers have rights that we do not have in the United States because our scumbag corporate overlords, Delta Airlines, and every fucking politician who doesn't make safety regulations and travel rights for the human being passenger taxpayers, we don't have all kinds of protections like internet privacy or travel rights.
Yeah.
So European travel rights and KLM, I was reimbursed for the full price of the bag because I kept the receipt.
Because they fucked it up and they should pay for it.
So I have two rips on it, but they make me smile every time I see it because I got a free
Tumi
bag out of the rips.
Oh, that's cool.
Anyway.
Yeah, my mom said that. She goes, you know, if they delay you over a certain amount of hours, like 3 or 4 hours, whatever it is, like they just have to pay you all this money. It's not just like free flight shit like they do here. Like,
yeah, and then also KLM, I was given a per diem.
Wow.
For those days, those extra days that I was in Switzerland, which I should have known. I didn't know that until after the fact.
Yeah.
Because I was just eating at like some regular restaurants. Had I known, I would have gone to much nicer restaurants that KLM was footing the bill.
Oslo, I liked. I thought it was a cool,
I love Oslo,
punk town.
Yeah.
You know, away
cool
from
people.
Like away from the town center where the tourist, where the Nobel Prize place is. But like,
I like it better than Stockholm and I like it better than Copenhagen. Oslo, I thought.
I like it better than Copenhagen.
I haven't been to Copenhagen in years.
Oh,
so
I need love to, Copenhagen.
Yeah, I need to give Copenhagen a. Actually, I shouldn't say that.
They can both be great.
I was in Copenhagen, I think 15 years ago was the last time. It was December. They had Viking torches illuminating the main boulevard, and then they had that, they only bring it out at Christmas, that warm red wine with raisins and nuts in it.
Wait, I know this. It's Glug.
Yeah.
Glug.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, with raisins in there and nuts. It's so good.
Yeah,
it's different than mulled wine.
Spoon.
Yeah. It's different than, what do they call it? What do they call the other one?
Mold.
Glue wine.
Yeah.
Glue wine. It's slightly different. It's like the Danish version of it.
Yeah.
Glug. Yeah. My friend took me there to get some. She's like, oh, yeah, you got to get glug while you're here. And I was like, oh, yeah, the raisin with the spoon. You pull them out.
It's awesome.
Stockholm, you got to know a local. That's what I figured out.
I did know a local. One of the best friends I made in Amsterdam, the guy lives in Sweden. And so I hung out with him for a couple of days. It was great. I hadn't seen him in a few years. But I had just come off 7 days in Oslo, loving it.
Yeah.
It's super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the club in Oslo is great. It's called Latter, which is Norwegian for laughter.
Oh, yeah. I played there.
Great room.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm friends with a lot of the great local Norwegian comedians. But Sweden, it was okay.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how some of this is just based on like the time you had?
Yeah. You know? I mean, I was only there for 2 days. Maybe if I'd have been there longer.
Somebody asked me, this guy Dave Temple is a comic. He's like, what's the same question? Was like, what's Asia like? And I was like,
how can you answer?
Dude, that's crazy what you're asking me. And he goes, well, I'm
what's
thinking
Asia
going.
Like?
Like, there's different countries.
What's America like?
Right. If I tell you the difference between New Yorkers and people from Alabama, you know, or somebody, let's say Tuscaloosa, you know, it's like those are different people. Fucking Brooklyn versus Manhattan is different.
L.A. five blocks from here is different
right.
than fucking
so
one
to say what's
here.
It like, it's like that's just so broad that you can't answer that. And a lot of it's just based on also like, what did you get into while you were there? I might have taken a left instead of a right and not come across a street festival that I had spent all day at, you know?
You know what I think is, it's funny, like the, like some of the stupidity people have. Like my brother years ago, my oldest brother asked me when I was living in Holland, he asked me, do they have cows in Europe? And I told him, I said, you know, Holland is famous for cheese.
Yeah.
And cows are a very crucial element in making cheese. They have cows there. And like when people ask you questions like that, I always think, you know, you shouldn't travel. You shouldn't. And I always say, like, if you're the kind of person that would say to a French person, if it wasn't for the United States, you'd be speaking German. If you're that kind of person, you should not travel to Europe. And then our president said that.
Oh, my God.
2 months ago to Macron.
Did he really?
When he went. Well, I think it was 1 month ago.
What a dork.
Our fucking president spoke those words out loud on French soil. Or actually, it was when he was flying back from France. He tweeted it like a candy-ass pussy
but
who's not man enough
to do it
to
while
say
he's
how he really feels to someone's
And by
face.
The way, as a comic, unoriginal. That's not something you came up
it's
with.
A hack.
That's a hacky
it's
thing
a hack
to say.
Fucking premise.
You know what I found? That people like to people hate Americans when you found when you're traveling. And I was like, no. Actually, I was always told that. I find quite the opposite. They love us. We have at our base, we have a tipping culture, which almost anyone you come
Everybody,
in contact
yeah.
with loves that.
Everyone loves that tradition.
People like cash.
Of Americans.
Yeah, so when like an American sitting in a restaurant, like, yeah, even if you tip the 10%, it's still higher than, you know, whatever else is going to give you. I've had people go, are you sure afterwards? I'm like, well, not anymore. I'm not.
Yeah.
But yeah, they like us, but you got to be out there trying to live the life. You got to like get into the fucking what they're doing. You can't be like, we're better than you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. The people who would say that, if it wasn't for us, you'd be speaking German. It's like, yeah, and if it wasn't for them, we'd still be spelling color with a U.
Yeah.
You know?
Color.
Yeah. So fucking get over it. Now we move to a new continent, Vancouver.
Vancouver, the
one
Comedy
of my favorite
Mix
cities.
Is one of my favorite clubs
comedy
in the world.
Comedy Mix is great.
And I play there once a year. And then, that is a perfect example. You know, I had all this great stuff because I've been playing in Vancouver so long, and I got a lot of great thoughts about the Native Americans who lived around Vancouver, the Squamish tribe, and they actually went down into Washington to Seattle too. In Washington, you'll see
a casino called Squamish.
Squamish, right? Yeah. That was the name of the tribe in that area.
Yeah.
So I said. I love ancient cultures, and I've spent my life reading about Native Americans. One of my favorite tribes was in this area, the Squeamish tribe. They were a very brave people who couldn't stand the sight of blood. When they would hook a fish, they would gag reflex. And they had to work with other tribes to get the hooks out
people
of
like,
fish's mouths.
People like, that's not Squeamish, it's Squamish.
No, but it wasn't like that. It was funny. But then also, my favorite kind of audience in the world is multinational and multi-ethnic. So like London, Chicago, San Francisco, all my favorite places are like that kind of audience. And Vancouver is so perfectly.
Vancouver is what they call it.
Is multinational, multi-ethnic. Yeah. So I had such brilliant crowd work in Vancouver that I was going to cut it out and just keep the, like Vancouver 1 is like Vancouver, Canada material. And then Vancouver 2 and 3 is there was an Iranian guy in the audience, a Mexican guy. I decided to keep those in because they're
cool,
so probably. Fucking awesome.
Yeah, I like Vancouver, and especially the thing I love most about Vancouver, not for me, the weed there is great, but the way they deal with their drug addicts is better than anywhere I've ever seen. They have places for them, safe shoot-up spots.
Holland has that as well.
It's crazy. It's so cool.
Yeah, and then Holland also made the decision a few years ago to treat heroin addicts with heroin instead of methadone.
To get them hooked on
something. For years, it's been give someone methadone and try and bring them down from there.
Yeah.
And then Holland, their experts think that's not useful or productive. And so if you're a heroin addict in Holland, you can get heroin from the government. And
because you have an addiction. You have a
shoot
problem.
It up in a safe place.
Yeah, and you tell them, like, I'm shooting this up. Like, thank you for telling me. If you start
and they
to
give
involved,
you fresh needles.
I know what to give
it's
you.
It's not right? My thing. I'm afraid of needles. And
then you don't go.
Yeah, I would never do heroin.
I heard this. I think,
do you hear that, Delta Airlines? Do you hear what a quality person
do heroin.
You have denied your diamond fucking status?
You're take away diamond from someone who
I
doesn't
drink,
do heroin?
I don't do hard drugs.
He doesn't even take the free booze you offer him.
Exactly.
They're going to come through, man. Delta, come on. Rise to the occasion.
155,000
miles. Say like, oh, no, we didn't realize
you're
definitely one of our... We're most respected, and we'd love to have you as part of our diamond. In fact, we're lowering the things for you because you've been here. 100,000, no dollars.
I earned it.
You earned it. Grandfathered in. I got laid in Vancouver off stand-up once, and it was really like a big, it was like, wow, I can get laid off this? You know what I mean? Like early
yeah.
on, we're like,
well,
oh,
this is
people.
A whole new world for me. Like I said,
yeah.
I'm only freshly single after 10 years.
You're going to love that part, man. Get wet, Tom Rhodes. Get wet. Sydney, Australia.
Vancouver, Sydney. So see this flow.
Yeah.
So like, oh, I think that was what the point, that like when you're young and you're like imagining making albums, making specials or just creations of your thing, the flow of this album, as I've been listening to it, that was like, wow, this is the way I think it should flow.
You also take it into a place of like, let's say you were traveling around the world.
Like, it's like a journey.
Yeah, because you don't go Paris, Vancouver, Stockholm, Hong Kong, Amsterdam.
Yeah.
You're like, you're through Europe for a while.
And then we go to Scandinavia.
Yeah, then you go to Scandinavia. Right, then you go to the UK and then through there. Yeah, and then... You're right. So move up, then go Vancouver,
Sydney,
Australia,
up through Asia,
and then through Asia,
yeah,
and then to the end of Asia / you know back to the European areas,
Israel.
What do they call Israel? Is that Asia or Africa?
The Middle East. I mean, I think technically it's part
thing.
Of Asia.
It should be its own thing because Egypt is Middle East,
but,
and that's
but
Africa.
But India is also considered Asia.
Yeah,
which, I mean, India is India.
You can put
and
India.
The Middle East is the Middle East,
and fucking Beirut. Together?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I don't hold by that. But yeah, it really reads as
the
like
Sydney
a
material
plan.
Is phenomenal.
Yeah.
They were voting on marriage equality when I was there, and then also
they got it.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And then they were having the same time we were having our Confederate statues
taken down
issue, they were having an issue in Sydney over the Captain Cook statues, which says he discovered Australia when, of course, no one discovered Australia.
It was already discovered.
It was already there.
Yeah.
He was the first white European to come there. Like, so all these, like, you know, hardcore, I wouldn't even call them lefties. I wouldn't want to, you know, sour
like
what I call myself. Some overly correct people think that they should tear down. And I think the Confederate statues should come down.
Right.
Because those weren't put up after the Civil War, and they were the fucking losers. And like I said, the South should have been properly shamed the way Germany was. So they should never have been allowed to have those statues to begin with. So, and those statues went up in the late 50s, early 60s when the civil rights movement was taking off.
Oh, it wasn't like right after
the
war.
So it was a direct message to the black people, the white person is in charge. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
But those statues were only put up in the American South
wow.
in the 50s and 60s.
I figured they were around since the Civil War.
No. When the Civil Rights Movement began is when those statues
then they
went
started
up.
Celebrating them.
That's why
oh,
I'm saying
weird.
This album, and I say this on the Sydney track.
Yeah.
This album is also a university education, aside from a travel log. It's the greatest album ever made. for comedy.
I love it.
So in Sydney, the Captain Cook statues, they had vandalized one. Some people had taken it down. I said that the American Civil War statue should come down, and I explained what I just explained to you. But the Captain Cook statue, I think, should stay. Captain Cook was murdered in Hawaii by Hawaiian natives. So don't take the Captain Cook statue down. You should surround the Captain Cook statues with statues of native Hawaiians approaching with spears.
That's nice. Yeah. Dude, my favorite when they're taking down those Civil War statues is the way you said it is like very clear and without emotion. Like, oh, we put it up then. I don't think it's not the right time. But then we're taken down. There were these angry, mostly college kids or just out of college. And when they pulled Robert E. Lee's maybe down, and they were so mad. I saw one lady like stomping on his head. And yeah. I want to be like, hey, you know, that's just iron. That's not a real dude. You're not like getting
it. Well, I also thought it was hilarious when the Iraq War, when the American soldiers went in. You remember when they pulled down that Saddam Hussein statue in Baghdad? And these Iraqis they took their shoes off and were hitting it. Bad statue.
Yeah.
Bad statue.
The statue doesn't feel this, man. It's not animate.
It's hilarious.
Let's move on to one of my least favorite cities in the world. Bangkok, Thailand. I fucking hate that place, man. It's dirty as shit.
I love Bangkok.
Really? I get it. A lot of people say
I didn't like it when I first went. That's the thing with a lot of places. Sometimes, like, I hated Singapore when I first went.
Oh.
Now I go back. The street food in Singapore is amazing. The
street hawkers.
Black pepper crab is one of my favorite things on the planet Earth. Ooh. I would fly to Singapore for the black pepper crab. I'll tell you the highlights of Bangkok. In recent years, I've started staying in Chinatown. There is a hotel in Chinatown in Bangkok called the Shanghai Mansions.
Yeah.
And it is kind of designed like Shanghai in the 1930s, which is the most romantic period of Shanghai, China. Mm. It's more Shanghai at the Shanghai Mansions than it is in actual Shanghai. And Shanghai is my favorite city in Asia. So all of the street food in Bangkok, they've since clamped down on it. It used to be street food all over the city.
Yeah.
Now they've killed it because they can't tax it. It's been in front of a lot of restaurants. So most of the street food vendors in Bangkok have been eliminated.
What?
Chinatown is the one part of Bangkok where they still allow it to flourish.
Oh.
So you have that. And then also, the river runs right by Chinatown in Bangkok. You can take a water taxi to the Temple of the Reclining Buddha. And in the back of the Temple of the Reclining Buddha is a massage school where they teach the ancient Thai massage. You can go there, and there's like a little modern building in the back of the temple area. So an hour Thai massage, not a dirty, happy ending one. Lame. Do you hear the morality that I speak with Delta Airlines? Fuck you if you lower me to diamond. An actual artistic ancient Thai massage for an hour is like $6 for an hour.
Dude, the massage
so
there
really
is so cheap.
I really enjoy taking the water taxi up the river to the Temple of the Reclining Buddha and entering into a temple of Buddhism to go get massaged for $6, I think is really cool.
$6.
You got Thai boxing, which is incredible. The famous Thai boxing stadium is really cool to go see Thai boxing.
What's that called? You remember?
I'll go look at the T-shirt, but it's a long 42-letter word.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there is the Banyan Resort or Banyan Tree Hotel. I think it's the Banyan Resort Hotel. On the top floor, it's 58 stories tall. There's a restaurant and a bar up on the top of the Banyan Resort.
Yeah.
To go up to the top of the Banyan Tree Hotel an hour before sunset... The restaurant's too expensive. I say go to the bar. And I don't drink anymore, but I used to go up there and get a bottle of wine or have some beers. I've seen about 5 sunsets up at the top of there. It's one of the best things you can do in Bangkok.
It's I don't know if it was Asia or just when you're traveling. There's something about a sunset or sunrise that's like more special than when you're at home seeing one. When you're at home seeing one, it's like, cool. It's almost like a destination to see a sunset in a place. You know, like what you said about Paris or this, where it's like, yeah, that's the thing to do. To go watch a sunset in a spot. I don't know what that is, but it's a real thing.
Yeah. And my favorite thing about Bangkok is the shows. I've always done great shows. The expats that live there and the people. I really love playing in Bangkok. And there's a couple of great clubs there now.
Are there?
There's the Comedy Club Bangkok, which is a great room.
Might have done that one.
And then someone else just came out with a... And that's my album track was done at the
Comedy Club Bangkok.
Comedy Club
is that
Bangkok.
The one inside and then upstairs?
Yeah.
Okay, I played there.
Yeah.
It was cool. I was wearing... It's the last time I'll probably
do it. It's above a British pub.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a great room.
I was wearing shorts, cargo shorts, because it was fucking 94 degrees at 10 p.m.
I would never wear shorts on stage.
Yeah.
You did?
Here's why I won't anymore. I was like, these are extenuating circumstances. I would never do this, but it's so fucking hot. And then I'm on stage, and I'm looking at the audience, and most of them are wearing jeans or pants. And then afterwards, just hanging out with a woman, just, you know, not like romantic, just hanging out. And she was like, you look like a tourist.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm never going to do that again.
I would never wear shorts on stage.
It was disrespectful to the craft.
Yeah. I see young guys do that sometimes, going with like basketball shorts. I'm like, wow.
You would have to be coming from a basketball game and then going, hey, can you go on? There's nobody here. And like, oh, fucking, can I borrow pants from somebody? You know what I mean? I'd rather put short pants on than.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awful. I still feel shitty about it. You look like a tourist. God damn it. I still feel like a fucking asshole for that. Almost drowning in Thailand. I've heard you tell that story. It's great. It's a fun story.
It's one of my, it's, you know, a near-death experience should equate to a
And you got to story. Do that in Bangkok?
Actually.
Where was that recorded?
That story was recorded in Paris in October. It's a story about, I was staying on a French resort, and it was this, I had this crush on this French girl that was my diving buddy, and the diving instructor was this French tattooed criminal scumbag from Montpellier, France.
Yeah.
And there was a reason why he was hiding out in Thailand. You could smell the cocaine criminal past on this fucking guy. So actually, the story, that track is 8 minutes long. It's an 8-minute story. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of my greatest stories.
It was great.
And I did record it in Thailand, but the version
that's on here,
that's on there, was recorded in Paris. I have it in the Asia section because it's the Asia story,
there.
But the recording in Paris, I think I left off a couple of sentences when I did it in Bangkok, and then I think I stumbled over something.
So you're like rather.
So the telling of it was perfect in Paris.
Do you introduce these at all, or does it just go track, track, track?
No. Usually it'll be, hello, Bangkok.
Right.
I say that I took that little sliver from
and
the beginning of every show.
Oh, that's smart.
So every track is identified with. Usually, but the almost drowning in Thailand story is not.
Yeah.
And then like London 2-3 is not. Vancouver 2-3 is not. Only that first track of a city.
Then you went to Vietnam, Hanoi.
One of my favorite places in the world. You know, I did this comedy special for Comedy Central in 1995 called Viva Vietnam.
Okay.
Vietnam opened in 94 for Americans to travel there. I have a connection with Vietnam because my father flew helicopters in the Vietnam War. And he was shot down, and everyone in the helicopter died except for him and his co-pilot, who was knocked unconscious. And my father had to unhook him, and my father dragged him across a field under heavy fire. And And so Vietnam was a big topic in my house. I'm smiling because I should say, Delta Airlines, you're denying the son of a fucking American war hero his earned fucking diamond status. I'm sorry. I won't do that joke anymore. So
They should update you. It's bullshit.
So I did this comedy when I was like the man at Comedy Central. I did this hour special called Viva Vietnam. And I got to go there. And when I did that, my favorite place was Hanoi. Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, is a little more Americanized, where Hanoi has got these beautiful tree-lined French boulevards. There's lakes all over the downtown. The club that I played looks out onto the lake where John McCain landed in the Vietnam War, and all the townspeople of Hanoi surrounded the lake, and they beat the shit out of him when he came out of it. And I say that on stage, that it's so cool to be on stage looking out on the lake that John McCain landed in, and I can do a joke, and it might not go over, but no one's going to fucking beat me and torture
that
me.
Bad.
Yeah. That it's great of this evolution.
I wish I got into Hanoi. I just went to the south in Vietnam.
You have to go to Hanoi because it's one of my favorite places. I know you'll love it. And the guy that runs the gigs there is this British guy. And he also gives motorcycle tours of the north of Vietnam. So I've been afraid of motorcycles my whole life.
Yeah,
I've only been on a motorcycle when I was there last April. I stayed a couple extra days so I could go on this motorcycle tour with him. It was the fourth time in my life I've been on a motorcycle. 45 miles north of Hanoi, going up a mountain, my motorcycle went out from under me.
Oh,
there was
no
dirt on a corner I got too close to. My head hit the ground, but I was wearing a helmet. And I was not, I lost some skin on my elbow. That was
That's it.
It. And I was so fortunate to survive this accident. But one of the coolest things you could ever do in your life.
That's one of the reasons I didn't stay in Vietnam longer, is because I'm like, what I really want to do in Vietnam is, and a lot of people have done this, Turner Sparks, remember him?
Yeah.
He's done it where you go from the south to the north or the north to the south. You buy a motorcycle for $250. You get to the other place. You sell it for like $150. And you just take 20 to 50 days to travel up or down.
That's
Vietnam.
Awesome. The only problem with that is Vietnamese people do not recognize traffic lights, stop signs, or any of the protocols of highway safety.
Isn't it crazy crossing the street and you see 88 fucking motorcycles trying to go by you? You're like, how am I supposed to cross the street?
And you walk slowly and then they all go around you. It's magic.
What I do is,
but
I
that's
try to find
not
a
local. That's in the city. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in the countryside.
Oh, then they don't recognize traffic
they
lights.
They don't. You know, you're going down a fucking road and you got a green light. And you're full throttle, and then all of a sudden, some little teenager in a moped comes shooting right in front of you. Or like a truck coming the other way will do a U-turn right in front of you.
And you're like, what the fuck?
And it's like almost like, are you trying to fucking wreck me?
Wow.
Yeah. Other than that, Vietnam is a great place.
Yeah, the road safety in some of these places is amazing. I was just in Egypt, and they in like in a lot of Asia also, I think they think your headlights use gas. And so they just turn them off.
Ha.
And they just drive that until the last second, like something's coming, they'll flip them on. I'm like, okay, I see that, and then turn it off. So potholes come at you fast.
Wow.
Yeah, and you're like, well, I'm in it. I'm not going to tell them how to live their lives. And they don't wear a seatbelt. In fact, in Luxor, there was a guy's like, they give out tickets here if you don't wear your seatbelt. So he rigged his seatbelt so it could be across his chest but not plugged in.
Wow.
And I'm like, why not just plug it in?
Wow.
Manila, I'm sort of scared to go. I want to go to the Philippines, but not Manila.
Yeah, and that's that. Your instincts are absolutely correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the Manila is a disgusting city. Mm-hmm. Near the hotel where we were staying, they had midget boxing. And me and the other comedians went, and I talked to the owner, and I said...
Was he a midget?
I said, we are in the rest of the world calling them little people now. And he said it cost too much to replace the neon sign. there were little people boxing.
Was he one? The owner? No.
No. It was a funny story. Walking back to the hotel in Manila, You're just a lot of homeless people, and then you see, you know, young women selling their bodies. Lots of beggars, lots of young mothers holding their babies. I was told that some of those women, those aren't their children, that they just do that so they can, like, you can see in the daytime, they'll pass a baby to the people are doing shit. And the little fucking baby's in the sun all day getting sunburned.
Oh, my God.
And people are just at red lights begging. I mean, that's the thing about some of these places that are, like, Cambodia can be heartbreaking. Manila can be very heartbreaking. Walking back to the hotel. I would like to see more of the Philippines and the beautiful, pristine beaches. I was supposed to go to that resort beach that got closed while I was there.
Cebu?
No, Angel Island? I forget the name of it. But anyway, but in Manila.
Why did it close? For drugs?
No, because the overdevelopment. Hotels were dumping sewage directly into the ocean, and tourists were just, it was just so much
fucking capitalism,
pollution.
Man. It churns everything up and spits it out and doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, Delta. I hope you heard that. walking back to the hotel in Manila, this guy comes up to me. He's got a New York Yankees baseball hat on. He goes, brother, can you spare some money? I'm living on the street. I said, God damn it, man. Are you American? Yeah. Guys, his English was perfect. Wearing a fucking New York Yankees hat. He goes, no, I lived in Los Angeles for many years, and I was living with a Filipino woman, and one day I came home and caught her in bed with another man, and I grabbed my baseball bat, and I beat the man pretty bad, and I had to spend 6 months in jail, and when I got out, they deported me back to the Philippines. And I said, do you still like baseball?
I guess we're not.
He goes, yeah, how are the Yankees doing? you know, always good.
Always up there. There's my cleaning.
That story's not on the Manila trip, okay. By the way.
It's a dark. My cleaning, whatever, the laundromat I go to around the corner from my apartment.
Yeah.
The guy who works there, Edwin, he's Filipino, and we always talk. And I'm like, what about this guy? I forgot the name of the president now, who outlawed drugs. So they'll put you
Duterte.
Yeah. And I was like, pretty bad, right? Because I'm used to talking to travelers, to hostel livers. You
Filipinos
know?
Love him.
He goes, no, he's the best. I'm like, what? Yeah. He's killing people who do drugs. He goes, right. My whole country is being lost to drugs.
Yeah, Filipinos
love
him.
And he put the law down.
He's doing a great job.
And he said, you can come get help. You can come. I'll rehab you if you admit it yourself. If I catch you, I'm putting you to death. Because I want this done. These drugs are done.
Yeah.
It's not people having a fun New Year's Eve party and doing some Molly.
Yeah.
It's not like that. They're stuck in fucking exhaust pipes to get, you know, that we're losing ourselves to them. We're like, wow, what a different perspective.
Yeah.
I told Edwin, I'm like, I'm going to go at some point. Maybe not Manila.
Yeah, I was shocked too when I found that out. They love him.
Wow.
The only people that would speak against him would be people who've had their family members murdered.
Right.
But everybody else thinks he's doing a great job. That's the thing we don't realize in America. You know, not everybody wants democracy.
Right.
We have our own spin on it. Not everyone believes in liberal democracy or you know, fair elections and shit like that. Some people think dictatorships system. And hard rule of law is the way to do it.
I was talking to somebody in Berlin about the wall, and they was like, yeah, my uncle was on the other side of the wall for forever, then we kind of got reunited. And I was like, oh, why was he on the other side? And he goes, oh, he was a socialist, and he was living in the socialist part of town.
Yeah.
And then when they put the wall up, they were like, you got to come over here. He goes, no, you guys got to come over here. Live in the socialist rule. It's way better. And then the wall went up, and then it's like no more contact until it was able to. But it was like, it wasn't like everybody wanted to be on what, there's just differences of opinion on how to run shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We look at Duterte, whatever,
Duterte.
As like this awful person, but they're like, no.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. We got four more cities. This is such a cool
idea. Manila, and then
Hong Kong, one of my favorites.
Hong Kong, yeah. And there's three Hong Kong tracks.
You're gonna add a third.
Yeah.
Hong Kong and the comedy scene was so fucking cool. And I went there after my first trip, real foreign trip, Asia trip. So I went there after about 9 days of being in Shanghai and Beijing. And really, like, I'm kind of an introvert. And so I love, like, just getting there. I'm like, cool, I'll see you guys later, you know, Turner and whatever. And I'm just going to walk around and see shit.
Yeah.
Being by myself, I like it. I can entertain myself just walking, especially when it's warm out. But after 9 days of not really having any good conversation with anybody, my introvert battery was fully charged, and my extrovert battery was like down now. And so I got there just like needing friends, and then the scene just took me in, and it was just so fun and friendly doing shows in and around Hong Kong. I fucking fell in love with that place.
I love Hong Kong. Taking the Star Ferry is one of my favorite things in the world. It costs 25 cents.
To get what? Over the...
To go to the Macau... I'm sorry, Kowloon, to the Kowloon side.
25 cents.
25 cents. It's been that forever. The very first European... I'm sorry, Asian gigs 20 years ago... was this guy, John Moorhead. He had this Hong Kong tour, and then you would do... It was always... And it was only booked out of London. So the fact that I was in with London 20 years ago is how I got onto this. It was only a couple of Americans that he ever used. Arch Barker, Rich Hall, I think Dave Fulton. But it was mostly English guys and Irish guys and whatever, because it was... You were mostly playing for British expats. So... And Hong Kong was his main thing. So you would do, every time you do the tour, it would be different. You do Hong Kong, Beijing, Shanghai, maybe Singapore.
Well, it's these different scenes they have to decide to come
first
together.
First time I went to Bangkok, it was part of his tour. Mm-hmm. First time I went to Tokyo, it was part of his tour. So now, and that guy, he was mainly concerned with the British expats, and then he wouldn't, and that's how Turner got started, because Turner was in Guangzhou, and he wanted to do a guest set. That's when I met him. And this guy was like, no, we only do professionals. And the guy who owned the bar was like, let him go on. And then he let him go on, but an hour before our show started. So Turner started his own tour. And that guy, only concerned about the British expats, lost everything. And now he doesn't really have any tour of China at all. This guy had a monopoly on the comedy scene of Asia. Whoa. Before anybody else was there. And it was great. You'd fly first class on Virgin from London.
What?
I remember going to Heathrow like 5 hours early for the flight.
To
just
enjoy.
So you could like have a nice hang in the Virgin first class thing. But that's how Turner actually got started. So I've been playing in Hong Kong for 20 years. And there's so many elements to it. Every time I go to Hong Kong, I learn new restaurants, new cool parts of town to hang in, new artistic scenes that are happening, whether it's DJs or whatever.
Oh, there's DJ scene out there for sure.
DJ scene's incredible.
And there's all these expats. And the expats are so interesting all through Asia, because there's two different kinds, especially in Hong Kong and Shanghai. There's half people on a contract with a bank.
Making money.
3 or 4 or 5. But those people are adventurous, because like you could be on a bank contract in London, but you chose to be on a bank contract in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You have to be, it can't just be about the money. You have to be willing to take your family to a real foreign place. And the other half, but they're conservative people, and they're mixed with runaways, I call them. Just people that are like, I'll teach English there, but I'm getting away from an ex-boyfriend or a jealous ex-boyfriend or someone I did something
that's
wrong
the,
to.
Today's the modern equivalent of joining the French Foreign Legion.
Exactly.
Is going
teaching
to
English
Asia to teach
Korea.
English.
Yeah. And it's like, what a cool bringing together of people. So Beer Bay was just a place you just drink beer by the fucking water there. It's so cool. And then you hipped me to fucking one of the best parts of Hong Kong is, I can't remember his name now, the suit maker.
Oh, yeah, Rocky.
Rocky.
Yeah, those tailors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been using those guys for 20 years.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to try a different tailor the next time I go back.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because maybe there's more?
Well, the last time I was in Hong Kong, I've been having suits made for 20 years. And then they told me, like some of my older suits, they had they made the shoulders too big.
Yeah.
Like fucking suits from the 80s and 90s had like really padded shoulders. And I told them I had some older suits. I wanted them to adjust. And the guy said, yeah, no problem. Bring me everything. So the last time I went, I brought like
a bunch of old suits with you.
I brought like 5, 6 old suits with me, and he charged me. There were small corrections. He charged me $50 each.
Oh wow!
So I ended up, and I said, really? After 20 years I've been having, I've had probably 40 suits made.
Yeah.
And I've recommended countless comedians around the world. I've been...
Have your picture up there?
They have my picture on the front door. And you told me, bring everything and we'll fix it. You never said... So I thought it was a little cheap. There's nothing worse than when you're loyal to someone or something, and then they fucking nickel and dime you. And that's what I feel that Delta Airlines is doing with me. They're nickel and diming their most loyal, passionate fucking customer. And that's what Rocky in Hong Kong did to me. For all the people that I've sent to him, Schubert's had suits made. Yeah. Ryan Stout, Ari Shaffir, so many comedians I've sent them through the years. And then, like, I could have gotten these suits tailored made, tailor fixed in LA for $20 each.
Right. Oh, my God.
So they charged me an exorbitant amount to fix mistakes that they made.
All my suits I wore for This Is Not Happening, they're all from there.
Yeah.
All the crazy, like whatever you want, you get it done. And it's not $50 to make a suit. It's a few hundred. But
yeah.
But you leave out of there and you're walking with a suit on your over your shoulder, you know?
Nothing like having a tailored suit. And I've had so many suits made through the years. I you know, I get red lining. I get split cuffs. I get real buttonholes.
Nice. But then there's all these like... do I have enough time on here?
Well, we've been talking for a while, huh? A
couple hours. We'll wrap up soon. But like... as you leave, there's all these other tailors like, hey, you want a suit? Want a suit? Like, I got one. Like, get another one. You're like, guys, fucking come on. Go find someone who didn't just get a suit. I clearly am no longer in the market. But I'm going to try
a different tailor. I scoped out. There's a tailor that Prince and David Bowie used.
Oh, wow.
In Hong Kong.
Well, that's got
to
be.
And they're the same, like, a top quality suit to be made in Hong Kong will cost you probably like $400.
Yeah.
If you get all the extras that I do, you're looking at $600 or $700.
Yeah.
And there's these tailors in Hong Kong that David Bowie went to and Prince went to. So I'm gonna try them the next time
I
go.
Let me know how it is.
And that's the thing. Rocky's tailor in Hong Kong, Delta Airlines, it's the same thing.
That's
when you've been loyal to somebody and you've spoken highly and recommended them to everyone, and then they fucking nickel and dime
you.
Give
me that shit free and some coffee while you wait.
On some small shit like that, I think is treasonous.
You nickel and dime people that never can come back. If it's your first time using Delta, and they're like, sure, you can come, by the way, but if you check your bag, it's going to cost us. You're like, all right, yeah, sure.
Not
the people that are like, you're part of the family.
I'm all for capitalism. I'm all for people making their stockholders happy. Yeah. But you need to keep your most loyal customers happy, number one.
Yeah. Shanghai was my first stop in Asia.
Shanghai's incredible.
It really is. Because even
it's such a great city, isn't it? And you talk about artistic and exciting. There's a great jazz scene, like the way Harlem was in the 30s is how Shanghai is now. I've met American jazz musicians living in Shanghai, and they're working every night of the week.
Wow.
It's like being a comedian living in New York City.
Wow.
There's like, at the Edinburgh Festival, I met this black woman from Alabama who was doing a one-woman show on Nina Simone.
Oh.
And she's lived in Shanghai. She's a singer.
She makes a living.
Jazz singer.
And lives there.
Fucking.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. And whenever I'm in Shanghai, like the people I meet in the audience are like, everyone there is doing something really cool. Like you were talking about Hong Kong like that. Most of the people I meet in Hong Kong are like in the banking industry.
Yeah, there's a lot more of those.
But
sure.
When I'm in Shanghai, you meet like Swiss filmmakers, French journalists, Japanese anime people. Like the people I meet in Shanghai are always there doing really cool artistic shit.
Wow. And then Beijing, I was only in for one day, but I liked that too.
I love Beijing. The
Hutongs were so fucking cool. I made the most out of that probably 36 hours that I've ever made in any city.
Beijing is in another place that, like, I know I've talked to people who hated Beijing. They thought it was filthy and disgusting. And,
wow.
Beijing, I think, and then the club that I played was in a Hutong area.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I forget the name of it.
I did the bookworm.
I did the bookworm
twice
before. Love the Bookworm. This was a different gig that I did.
The Hutongs were so cool. You were like, I'll just travel down here. You're like, oh, let me go left and right. I'll be parallel. It's like, no, there's no parallel. You're in a different dimension now.
Yeah.
And you're coming out of a whole different area.
But I went, I was taken to some really cool clubs afterwards. There was a bunch of Russian guys in the show.
You talk about it. I'm going to pee, but I'm going to hear.
And models and artists. And I met this lunatic from Florida, guy from Gainesville, living in Beijing. And he took me all around the city on his scooter. And he's the one that took me to the Russian bar, which was right next to a salsa bar owned by the same Russian guy. So this cool loungy bar had really attractive international people. And then right next to it was a salsa bar. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a really cool happening area. And then the main thing, the Great Wall of China is like an hour north of Beijing. And I've been to the Great Wall of China 3 times. And as a tourist visiting the Great Wall of China, there are 3 sections that you can go to. Only one of these sections has this magnificent slide that you can go down the Great Wall of China. Yeah, and I actually filmed it. If you go to YouTube and type in Tom Rhodes Magnificent Slide, I filmed the entire length. It takes like 3 minutes to go down this slide. It's incredible. But I've kissed 4 different women at the top of the Eiffel Tower, and I've been to the Great Wall of China 3 times. And took my
slide was so cool, and I think it was you or someone else gave me advice. It was like, talk to the guy who runs the slide for as long as you can, because you got to let people in front of you.
Yeah, clear
the fuck
totally.
Out.
Because I went in August.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of tourists, and it was all clogged up. If you go in other times a year, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not as enjoyable.
Went to June, but the cool thing was like you're like talk to the guy, and maybe you or maybe Dez.
We both peed twice for this podcast.
and so the guy's willing to talk to you because you're an American, you're a foreign person, and he's like, "Where are you from?" And you're just letting the guy in front of you go because you can go as fast or as slow as you want. But as soon as one guy goes slow, everybody behind him who's caught up also has to go slow. And there's a sign before you go on the slide saying this is not an official slide. This is not part of the government. It's unregulated. Go at your own risk. And you're like, oh, it feels pretty exciting, actually, to do something like that. So, yeah, you just got to talk to this guy about whatever, where you're from, and then just more and more and more. People behind you might start getting annoyed. Milk it as long as you can. Take their annoyance as long as you can stand it. And then when you go, let it out. Just let out the gas. You got to push forward to go and back to slow down, but let it out. Fucking take the risk of going over the edge. Because eventually I did catch up to the guy in front of me. And he just, it was the last like 3 or 4 minutes was kind of like lame. But I did a podcast actually from the Great Wall of China. I did an intro. I just walked up and down and it was like recorded a podcast.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. And I was like, this has got to be the first podcast recorded on the Great Wall of China.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. China, Beijing, places like that are like a cool mixture of, I told you this before, the statues you got to see.
Yeah.
Versus the living you got to do. So like, obviously, yeah, go to the Great Wall of China. Don't be an asshole.
Great Wall of China is amazing. And here's the thing.
The Imperial Palace.
Their specialty is Peking duck.
Uh-huh.
There are, it's a big night out. And you get all these little dishes and you get your little kind of rice paper thing to put the duck meat in it. It's one of the greatest culinary experiences you can have in the world. And there's restaurants everywhere in Beijing. Beijing used to be called Peking.
Oh.
For those of you who do not know.
I'm one of them. I'm no longer one of them.
It is the specialty of Beijing. Peking duck.
Oh.
You didn't know that Beijing was called Peking?
Nope.
Then you probably don't know that Beijing, what became the city, was the summer camp of Kublai Khan.
What was that?
The son of Genghis Khan.
Oh.
Yeah, that was his summer camp.
Summer hangout?
Yeah. Where they would fatten up the horses and...
Oh.
Yeah.
What I would say about the statues versus the living is... Great Wall was amazing. The Imperial Palace was amazing. So fucking cool. There was more blow in Beijing than almost any city I've ever
been
to.
Oh, no shit. Wow.
Yeah. In the Hutongs, in those places of the expats, it's like the life there was like, man, you guys went way harder than Hong Kong or Shanghai or almost anywhere except Scotland. They just went hard on it.
Yeah. See, I'm missing out on all that because I don't drink.
Yeah.
I'm a moral good person who only cares about his diamond status.
Then Ulaanbaatar.
Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia.
You know what I liked about the accent I heard on that NPR thing was it's this weird half and half accent of Russian and Chinese. You can like, kind of hear both voices. And
so Mongolia is between China and Russia. And the people look like a mix between Chinese and Russian.
Yeah.
And I think the Mongolians are some of the most attractive people on the planet.
Really?
Most of them have these really high cheekbones and just stunning people. And it's a very small city. I think there's only 600,000 people live there. And they have incredible pride. And it's one of the most cool and exciting places you could go. I mean, like, it's not like a party place. Right. Like you're saying Beijing. I don't know Beijing to be a party place. I only know Beijing for deliciousness and fun and good people and stuff. But maybe it's a big party place. I don't know. But I just loved Mongolia. Kind of like the same reason I like Beijing. The pride that people have that are from there. Oh. The great food. Mongolian food is meat on top of meat with a side order of meat.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I told you my mother's from Argentina.
Yeah. They're
famous for their Argentinian grill. But my family in Argentina that have done the big asado or however you say it, they bring the cheaper cuts of meat first. So you get full eating the grizzly fat meat. And then they bring out the best cuts of meat towards the end.
Possibly.
Mongolia, best cuts of meat, best cuts of meat, best cuts of meat. You're not going to get any grizzly shit.
Wow.
Grizzly, not grizzly. Gristle.
I got to get to Mongolia, man.
Yeah, I'm going to hook you up with Bata and Zolo.
Of all these cities, that one's getting... You know how when you get a city in your head and it just sticks or doesn't stick? You know?
Yeah.
Like certain cities, you're like... You'd be like, man, yeah, I guess I could go there. But other cities, like, wow, what is it? It just sticks in your craw.
You know how Asia is so great?
Mm-hmm.
These are the Asians that conquered all of Asia.
Oh, interesting.
I don't have enough good things to say about it, and especially the club there.
And you went in summertime where it's like decently warm. You can get around. Yeah. That's right.
It was great.
People still went out to shows?
No, and they're really into comedy there. It's like...
I'm going.
It's kind of the hot thing. Of the city, you know?
Yeah.
It's the hot thing to do. So you got like the youngest, most attractive, coolest people of Mongolia. Sure, you can go out to the countryside and see nomadic people who have lived their whole lives in tents.
Yeah.
You'll see that.
But that's not who's coming out to
show. And you'll see poverty and some pollution. But the cosmopolitan Mongolians are... pretty fucking cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going for sure. Hey, what's that guy's name? Zolo?
Zolo and Bata. Bata. Yeah,
get at me. It might be a year before I can do it, but I want to do it.
I want you to go there.
Okay.
I bet you find the love of your life there.
Maybe. Yeah. It'd be great if I came in with a bride.
Some woman who,
to my girlfriend, like, sorry,
she snap just your neck
better.
With a flick of her calf muscle.
They tough women there?
I mean, these are women that could give birth and... fight.
Keep working.
Yeah.
I'm not taking off a day of work because I'm giving birth to a kid.
Exactly.
Still milk a cow. Then you went to the Holy Land to round out this around the
Mongolia
world.
Mongolia and then Tel Aviv and Jerusalem are the last two tracks. Now, how long has it taken us just to talk about this album?
Yeah, 3 hours.
Imagine listening to this thing.
With actual comedy.
Yeah.
Instead of just two comedians fucking around.
I could not be prouder of this thing.
That's so cool, man. I love that so much. Because you've heard comics talk about their stuff. It's like, good, wish I'd done this or that. And you're like, all right, that means you got B plus, A minus level, which is nice. But when people go like, I did exactly what I wanted to do, then you're like, yes.
Yeah, and a lot of comedians are playing around the world now. But mm-hmm. they will go and they will do their act that they do in Kansas City.
Yeah, for sure.
Or wherever. And they do the same act. Maybe they'll have one or two observations about a place.
Yeah.
But this is the product of me doing the international circuits for 20 years.
And for long enough that it's like you're not just influenced by these things and go home with it. You're influenced and you're going to go home and come back. And be like, oh, here's the thing I've always noticed about this place I've been to 9 times.
Yeah.
You know? Instead of just 2 days.
Yeah. This is the product of a lot of time spent in these places.
And also, what your perspective is, it's not just America or this. It's America or London or Zurich or Balambatur or Tel Aviv or this place or that. So it's like you see real differences and not just not like America, you know? You see the pros and like the differences in this specific city or country, you know? Not this one. I mean, wherever you're at.
Yeah.
Because you compare it to more than just one other country. You know, I was making jokes. My own brother were making jokes about how Israelis, they have these ideas about what people are like. And it's like, oh, no, those aren't people. Those are Jews. You have ideas about what Jews are like. If you go to America and see a Jew, they're like, oh, they're like this. They're pushy or they're this. But in Israel, you're like, people are pushy. You're like, no, it's not people are pushy. It's just the only people you're around are pushy.
Yeah.
You know? How'd you find Tel Aviv? I found it so worldly and interesting.
Yeah. And I'm glad because Jerusalem, I thought the people were very snooty.
Mm.
And there's something with very religious people that gives them an air of superiority. And that is not only specific to Jewish people of Jerusalem. I grew up with hardcore Jesus freaks in Florida. I've met hardcore Muslim people in Europe. There is a my shit doesn't stink superiority that a lot of very religious people have I find a complete turnoff.
It is.
Because religion should make you a better person. It should make you compassionate towards the human race in general. It shouldn't make you think, well, God loves me more than these people. So Jerusalem, I found because we spent 5 days there before we went to Tel Aviv, my mother and I, before the tour started. To Tel Aviv, I found to be completely refreshing. We stayed on the beach. We stayed on this really cool area. Some of the best restaurants of our trip to Israel. The food in Tel Aviv was amazing. It's a very gay city.
It's one of the biggest gay pride parades in the world. The revelry.
It's very liberal and open-minded. The most beautiful women I saw in Israel were all holding machine guns.
Oh, those Tzahal chicks, man. Those IDF chicks.
It's so hot.
Green button down with their being ripped apart almost by the button, by their heaving bosoms, and they're holding a machine gun.
Yeah, that's hot.
And you're like, what is this boner?
Yeah.
What about the food when they bring you like 8 different small like dipping dishes? Have you ever had those meals there?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just delicious. Lovely. It's so delicious with fresh pita bread.
Yeah, no, I thought if I go back, I would like to spend more time in Tel Aviv. I mean, I brought my Jesus freak mom and we were specifically focused on Jerusalem.
Uh-huh.
You know, I lived in Amsterdam for 5 years. There are loads of Tel Avivians that live in Amsterdam.
They go traveling.
I have good friends in Amsterdam. They're all from Tel Aviv, and they've all told me forever, oh, my, Tel Aviv is such a party city.
Mm-hmm.
It's up all night. You'll love it. So my whole, for however long, 15 years, I've dreamed of going to Tel Aviv because it was so happening. And then when I did, I brought my 80-year-old religious mother. So it wasn't the Tel Aviv experience I had thought
80.
Of.
She looks great for 80.
We had a great time.
Yeah.
And we loved it. And, you know, it was good for my mom to see transgendered restaurant hosts.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They don't get that in Orlando much.
No.
I stayed in Florentin, this neighborhood in Tel Aviv. It's near Yafo. And just kind of poor, but a lot of graffiti. And man, people are just out doing things. And then I went to a nightclub that my cousin wants to move told me about, his favorite one. But all that shit starts at midnight and goes till like 6, 7 a.m. It's not like a boring city where it's like go from 8 to 12.
Yeah.
It's like this shit goes late like Berlin. It really reminded me of Berlin.
Hmm.
And then,
well, I'd like to go back. I'd like to, you know, I loved the shows, doing these great, you know, theaters. In Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, that was my favorite shows. The the city is great. It's Miami with machine guns. That's what Tel Aviv is is like. And what was the point that I was going to say? Oh, shit, I had something very clever I was going to say.
God damn it, Rhodes.
Oh my God, I've lost it. But I really loved it as the city. Oh, shit.
It was the first time I got to go as a non-religious person.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm sure it must have changed in the 2 decades since I'd been there, but I really spent almost all my time in Jerusalem anyway before. So I was just like overwhelmed by how amazing it was. And if, just in terms of gay pride, from what I heard was the gay pride parade in Tel Aviv is one of the most massive in the world. It's a fucking revelry like crazy. And the one 45 minutes away in Jerusalem is a political statement.
Yeah.
They are rebelling. They're not just partying. They're saying, we are gay. Deal with it. It yeah. really is like, and you might get stabbed.
Well, the guy did stab. The first gay parade in I know all about it. In Jerusalem, it was the first time recorded history or recent history that the Muslim leaders and the Jewish leaders and the Christian leaders all got together and said, how can we stop this? So a gay parade is actually the way to bring people. The hatred that everyone has towards gay people
together in hate
is the way to unify the world, apparently.
Wow.
So at that first gay parade in Jerusalem, a very fanatical Jewish Orthodox man went on a stabbing spree.
Yeah,
he was in prison for 9 years. He got out last year, and at that year's gay parade, he stabbed more people and actually killed a woman. So you could see him in his little jail cell, just kind of practicing his stick.
I mean, obviously, it's a level of I wouldn't even say evil. It's a misunderstanding to the point where your hatred is not justified. There's not reason.
I think anyone who kills in the name of religion should have every page of their holy book rammed up their asshole with a battering.
I'm down with that.
With a pile driver.
I'm down with that.
And if you die in a suicide attack, your mother gets it on live television.
Oh,
that
bad.
Should be world fucking policy.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I do like his stick-to-itiveness, though, where he's like, oh, this wasn't just, I wasn't temporarily insane. I hate the gays and I want to kill them.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow.
Guy sat in prison for 9 years.
Saying, I'm still going to do it again.
And got out and did the exact same crime. Yeah. Amazing. Wow. I remembered what I forgot.
Gotcha. Go.
The shuk in Tel Aviv is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's less touristy. It's where like the Tel Avivians people shop there.
Yeah, you get your
so
produce.
You got one area that's like you know household goods and kitchen stores and clothing and t-shirts and shit. And then the other side is food. And I bought a ton of spices
to bring back.
Yeah, and I'll show you. I went to the kitchen store and I bought all these cute little Tupperware things, like 10 of them. And I filled my spices with these things. I get this kind of Marco Polo feeling when I go to distant lands and can bring back spices. I think that's...
Yeah, that really is the thing.
That's like
the
way
spice
I imagined
trade.
Traveling as a boy.
Yeah.
And so not only spices, I brought back a fucking album.
That's cool because in a lot of... Oh yeah, you did. In a lot of places, you go to the market and it's like a t-shirt saying, I love Bangkok. And you're like, this was it even made here?
Can I have some spicy sumac, please?
Yeah. Bring that shit back. Like, I can't really get this one.
I have four containers of it.
Sumac.
Spicy sumac.
That sounds cool. And then Jerusalem. And then you were done.
And that was it. Yeah.
With Jerusalem, we were talking about before the podcast started.
And I ran into you on my last day in Jerusalem.
It made me so happy. So out of the blue, run into this fucking dude, this cool guy that I like, wait, what?
The two best travelers in the comedy world.
Yeah, very nice.
Run into each other.
In Israel. At
the Holy Sepulchre church. Where Jesus was, the spot where Jesus was crucified.
Yeah, then we just walked through the shuk for a little
while.
So
whenever you see Jesus on a cross, you better be thinking about me.
I think of Tom and Ari.
Rhodes just a few steps from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I'm really excited for you for Around the World for this album.
Thanks, man. And everybody should buy this record. I mean,
if
you love comedy, if you love me, if you just want to know shit.
Yeah, I have a lot of the education are travel fans now.
Yeah.
They sort of, a lot of people, some people don't, but a lot of people have gotten into like, you know, I guess my love of it, you know, and this really seems like a fucking travel album.
You will love this album.
Yeah, I think I really will.
Anybody would love this album. I mean, I'm going to sell the digital download for $20, mm-hmm. but like, that's a bargain for what you're getting.
You're getting really three albums.
And I think it's you're getting three albums. And
three unique albums.
I'll sell the vinyl box set probably for $100, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this is the creation of my career that I will be proud of until I'm dead, and it will be around long after I'm dead.
I say Tim Burton. I was always a Tim Burton fan.
Eech.
But you don't like him?
Yeah.
I think his last great work was Big Fish, because it was a movie about telling stories, which is what he had been doing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of his opus, because he was like, here's a movie about what I do. You know, not what I think, but about me. And then after that, he was like, he did it. You know?
Yeah, I never saw it. And then after what he did to Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, exactly. At that point, he's like, I'm just cashing in now. I've already did my last great thing.
Yeah.
Right. But like Edward Scissorhands, shit like that, was like, wow, this is interesting. This is really interesting stuff. This, with you being such a traveler and a comedian who the comedy is taking you to these places, this really does seem like that kind of opus kind of thing.
This is my magnum opus.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the result of 20 years of being
a nomad.
An international comedian.
Bedouin comedy.
Yeah. I couldn't be prouder of this.
I'm happy for you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. All right, let's wrap this the fuck up.
Yeah, and thank you to everybody who tweeted at Delta Airlines that they were scumbags.
That made them come through and do the right thing.
They better do the right thing.
They're for sure going to.
Yeah.
And then we're all going to be like, yeah, man, finally there's some good in the world. Delta showed it. Their bureaucracy, hey, everyone falls prey to that, but they did the right thing.
Every track on this album,
yeah,
I sat on a Delta or Delta-related plane to fly to these gigs.
Fuck it.
Every one of these gigs. All those China Airlines are related to Delta. Air France is related to Delta. Mm-hmm. KLM. I was their greatest ambassador. I spoke highly of Delta everywhere I went.
You will again, Tom. I believe in the human spirit, and I think it'll be done right.
Ed Bastian, when you look at that video, when you're sitting there before the plane takes off, if he says they believe in loyalty and thank you for your customer loyalty, it's a fucking lie. If they downgrade me to platinum and
platinum,
you see,
they may as well spit in your soup.
If you see me standing in zone 3 waiting to board an airplane, it's because Delta is a fucking low-life airline.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Rhodes, but the overhead cabins are all full.
Loyal
check your shit in. Take out your medical equipment. Sorry, loser. Oh, what?
Anyway, I love you very much, Ari.
You are
one of my favorite people.
Yeah, you
and
too,
I'm glad,
man.
My mother met you.
Yeah, I'm glad I got to meet your mom. That was cool.
At the where Jesus was crucified.
Our greatest triumph and your guys' greatest like horror. All right, Tommy. Thanks. Everybody, get around the world. I'll talk more about it in the outro, and I'll put it on the website, a link for it. But yeah, what a unique fucking cool idea for an album. Tom Rhodes, thank you very much.
I love you, brother.
Love you too. Travel love. Oh, baby, we'll travel. Have a love. Oh, baby, we'll travel. I said, if you need a love, then I'll travel. Well, mission accomplished. I got ice cream. It's soft. Why is it? It's like, better hurry up. It's soft. Why is it soft? They left the doors open. How do you serve somebody ice cream before telling them, hey, just so you know, this is all soft? You just handed the thing. It's like, hurry up, it's melting. As if I'm supposed to know. Anyway, you pay fucking $9 an hour for labor. That's what you get. I got rum raisin, in case anybody wonders. Generally, especially from Baskin Robbins, I'm a Cherry's Jubilee guy. And occasionally, Baseball Nut Crunch. And then once in a while, something else. But those are my mainstays. They had both of them. Baseball Nut Crunch is a seasonal one, but I guess for spring training. Here's why I wrote Rum Raisin. I do these podcasts about travel sometimes. I've been meeting more and more people who say, like, I've inspired them to go do some solo traveling. Rolf Potts right now is in Sri Lanka. Doing hostels because he said, I made them. Whenever I do these kind of podcasts, it gets me like antsy to fucking get gone again. And Tom talking about Paris and shit, and I want to go to Paris at some point, you know, gotta at some point. But that's not what got me juiced. I mean, you can tell from the podcast, what got me juiced was Mongolia. It looked fucking cool. I do like going to big cities and big new interesting cities, but what I like doing is exploring. I like going places where, like, the map doesn't really tell you all you need to know. It's gonna show you new stuff just by traveling and seeing the fucking world yourself. God damn, this is fucking melting off my goddamn hands. Sorry, what am I gonna tell you? I don't know. Can you scoop, go from the bottom? I mean, I didn't say any of this to her, so. It's all over my hands. So I want to go places, and okay, so this is reminding me of. I was in Timor-Leste on an island called Atauro, where I learned to scuba dive. And the woman who was married to the guy who owned the resort, not really a resort, it was just like a little beach with four huts, which had electricity at certain times of the day. The guy who owned the place, I think it's Atauro Dive Center, maybe. He had been on, I think, over 1,000 dives. He was super interesting. Met his wife in Kenya while he was there. And pretty much said, I'm going to take you to a new place. This was an old guy. This was a young, hot Kenyan bride. And she liked it there. She went on dives sometimes. But she made this ice cream. She made rum raisin ice cream. And she sold it. And I remember the head instructor who's since been fired, who's Portuguese. He was like, yeah, I'm spending all my money on this goddamn ice cream. Oh, come on. But that place, Atauro Island, where it's like, I met my friend Evelina. It was just out there, man. Like, there's no way to find stuff about it online, really. Maybe there is now. Maybe he's smart enough and did it, although he had, like, limited hours online. I had to take my PADI test for scuba diving. I had to take it on the computer, so he had, like, internet access for me. And I was using it every once in a while. I was going to ESPN.com because I was starved, you know, for fucking news and shit. And then at some point, the internet just went out. I'm like, hey, the internet went out. And he goes, why? We bought enough time for you to take the test. And I was like, oh, I don't know what happened. I didn't realize streaming videos was just taking his goddamn... all the internet he had purchased. They don't have it unlimited like we do. But that place, man, going where there's, I don't know, reminds me of that U2 song where the streets have no name. That's kind of what I think Mongolia is like. Those are the fun places that it's like, I think maybe you can't even go there as a first stop. I think you got to build your way up to get there. You know, get a little free of America or free of your home. And then once you're like sailing on your own, you're flowing, then you can go to a place that's off the grid like that. I don't want to go to some places like that. As soon as I'm done with this special. November, maybe December. Maybe October. Probably November, December. I'm out. As soon as it's done, I'm out. And I want to go to places like that. If you want to go to those places, I say fucking do it, man. But before you do, get Tom Rhodes' album, All Around the World. It's a fucking... it's his career work. And it's something cool and something I've never seen done before. All those local bits. Damn, this rum raisin takes me back there, too. The dinner on the goat standing right next to us. It was this goat. They had his pet goat. He would just eyeball you when you were eating the food. Get one Chang. Or a Heineken. Do they have Heineken, Timor-Leste? I forget what they had there. Man. Want to get out there. Anyway, get Tom Rhodes' album on iTunes right now, Around the World. It's 37 tracks. It's just a guide to the world. You're going to learn. You're going to have been there. It's like you'll have been there in his eyes. Anyway, if you want to see me, the Wandering Jew Tour brings Ari Shaffir Jew next to Miami, then West Palm this coming weekend. Followed by Vegas with the guys. On the 20th or something along there, 22nd. And then Toronto, Aladdin Theater in Portland, Seattle, the Neptune, and Calgary and Columbus and Cleveland, a few other places coming. Check out arishafir.com for tickets. And Delta, thank you for stepping up. I'm sure by this point you have now listened to this whole album and realized that this is a man who not only should you not take for granted, you should be looking to make him an ally. He's a world-class traveler, the highest-level traveler in all of stand-up comedy. I mean, who are the big ones? Him, number one. Who else is up there? Yoshi, Russell Peters, Jim Gaffigan likes to go places. Me, Rouse. I don't really know who else like wants to see the world like that. You know, those Australians, but they're fucking just escaping the bad cocaine. Anyway, that's it, you guys. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hopefully, 350s next week with Danish and the other Shoot Alive table read. I decided not to ask for Photoshop for those, because I feel like after you guys listen to it, the Photoshops will come in then. So once you hear it, fucking Photoshop it up, and I'll pay $25 for each one I use, and I'm going to use a lot for that one. All right, you guys, thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you, Tom Rhodes. Guys, get that album right now. Do me a favor, support this podcast by getting this Tom Rhodes album. Get on Delta. Fuck with Delta. Say, you gotta fucking get this guy back his status. Don't be assholes about it. All's forgiven. You just gotta do the right thing. You gotta do the right thing. Ladies and gentlemen, for Tom Rhodes, I'm Ari Shaffir. Say, so long for Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 351, Around the World with Tom Rhodes. Oh, that's a lot. All right, whatever. It's over. How much was it in my pocket? End this thing. This fucking milk I have. Bye, goodbye. I wanna run. I want to hide. I wanna tear down the walls and hold me inside. I wanna reach out and touch the flame. It's all